Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our Aiken City Council work session of June 22nd, 2009. We were hesitating a little bit, thinking that Jane Waters, Beverly Clyburn would come in, but we'll go ahead for the sake of time, and I hope they will come in. We do have two that won't be here, Leslie and Dick Smith. They won't be with us this evening. But our only item on the agenda, a very important one, is the Sand River Restoration Project. And without further ado, I'll throw it over to Roger to say what he would like to say about it. We do appreciate all the work that's gone in on it, I'll say that, having sat in a meeting already with Dr. Eitzen. And obviously his team is here with him tonight, I think. Roger.
Over the last several decades, there's been a lot of changes when you start considering stormwater and the issues surrounding stormwater and how to deal with stormwater. It was in the 70s that we started looking at even detention, you know, the destructive force that stormwater has on downstream areas. And it wasn't until the 70s that some of the larger cities said, you know, we need to do something about stormwater and detain it. And then as we got further forward, instead of just detaining it in detention ponds, creativity started getting more and more involved. Jane, why don't you sit over here so you can see the slides? Leslie's not here tonight.
Two empty seats tonight.
So we've kind of come full circles, and we are now at the really the cusp of starting something very unique and wonderful for our community and wonderful for our country, and the fact that we're now looking at ways not to just detain stormwater and using retention ponds, but to look at ways to recharge the groundwater systems that we have and to do it in a way that we could purify the water, detain it, and then recharge it. So Larry's been working with the Hitchcock Woods for a couple of decades now, along with myself, on a number of ways to work with the woods. And over the last few years, we have been working with Dr. Gene Eitzen, who is up in Clemson and heads up the watershed project up there. And we've been always looking for some projects where we could go ahead and use some of the unique solutions that Dr. Eitzen has developed with his team from Clemson. And so tonight we want to talk to City Council, the guests that are out there, about some very, very unique ways of solving some problems. And we're doing this because we received a $3.3 million grant from the state through some of the stimulus money that we need to start almost immediately. At the end of July, we have to start turning all of our plans in. We will then go ahead and they'll be reviewing them. The bids will go out hopefully mid to late fall, and starting construction sometime maybe late fall, early winter, actually on some of the things you see. So what you will see tonight is what this team of folks that you see in front of us has been working on for the last couple of months, and you'll actually see this in operation as we start moving forward with the construction phase of it later this year and early into next year. This time next year, most of the work will be completed, and it'll be then a research project for months and years to come. So with that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Eitzen.
Okay, thank you. Well, what I want to do tonight is really introduce you to the green infrastructure concepts that we're proposing. And first of all, I'd like to recognize my team. I'm Gene Eitzen. I'm a professor at Clemson and a resident here in Aiken. Two of my key investigators, we have Cal Sawyer and Vicki Chance. Both of them have added quite a bit to this project, and they will present portions of the presentation themselves. But the green infrastructure concept really comes out of the work we've been doing with the Sand River Ecological Restoration Master Plan, because this is a holistic master plan to address all the impacts that we're seeing in Hitchcock Woods. And we provided a preferred alternative analysis for dealing with Sand River, which incorporated green infrastructure. And we want to just review quickly some of those slides. I would like to mention that in your annual budget for 2009-2010, two of your goals that you had in the budget was, one, to find an ability and a strategy to deal with Sand Sand River with a stormwater problem, and the second was on sustainability. How can we use sustainability, focus methods and sustainability to enhance the city? And I think the project we're going to show you tonight is an example of how we can once again make Aiken a model city for sustainability and new ideas and innovation. We have eight watersheds that surround Hitchcock Woods, and you can begin to understand why we have potential impacts when you look at this topo and realize Hitchcock Woods is the low-lying area. So everything drains in the Hitchcock Woods. Land use around Hitchcock Woods and within these eight watersheds, highly built out, have a lot of park surface, a lot of infrastructure, resulting in flashy stormwater that flows into Hitchcock Woods. The impacts are something that we know. We're seeing continual erosion in Sand River proper from the downtown watersheds. We have about a 60-foot deep canyon, and the sand from this canyon has migrated down to the forested wetlands, causing a significant impact to those further down. We've gone through a master plan process. This has been a great collaborative blueprint. It's involved the city, it's involved Hitchcock Woods Foundation, the county, and other stakeholders, in which we talked about the project background, how we would develop a process to holistically handle the impacts of this stormwater issue. We talked about existing conditions, and we utilized all the reports that have been generated for the last decade in coming to an understanding of the existing conditions, so we didn't have to go back and reinvent the wheel there. We talked about remediation and stabilization of the canyon, talked about the importance of really, in this restoration plan, making sure that we restore it so that it has what we call ecological fidelity. The structure and function is similar to what was there. Very important to the city is that it represent an economic and durable prescription, that it be cost-effective, long-lasting, and then that we consider all of the issues of the stakeholders in the city, that we bring people together and we talk about historical, culture, social issues, et cetera, related to that plan. We had a series of meetings. We had a kickoff meeting in January of 2008, followed by three visioning workshops. And we were asked to provide a preferred alternative for this project. And this is one of the things that we looked at in terms of taking all the reports that have been done in the past several decades and trying to get people to work together in a priority format to really look at stabilizing the energy coming from the stormwater, dissipating the energy, stabilizing the canyon, and providing for storage. And so again, we had a wealth of information. And working with everyone, we came up with a hybrid design. And part of that design is green infrastructure, and that's really where we're trying to focus tonight. One of the things that we think is really important is that we minimize the amount of flow going into the Sand River as much as possible. We have a great opportunity, and our preliminary research shows we have a very significant opportunity to capture a lot of the stormwater upstream in the downtown watersheds through infiltration and storage, and we'll present examples of that. So with the preferred alternative, it begins with green infrastructure, it begins with storage within the watersheds itself. The preferred alternative, when we originally conceived of this, we thought we would be looking at green infrastructure during the entire period that we began the construction. But what we're finding now is with the stimulus funding, we're able to flip and we're able to look at that green infrastructure and that infiltration in a very meaningful way and look at it not only from methodologies but actually test them, do proof of principle so that we can understand how we can use these principles. Again, the concept that we're proposing is we will extend the pipe through the canyon. This is an innovative way to approach this because we will actually recreate historic Sand River on top of this piping structure. It'll be a dual piping structure that will serve as storage and transport of the stormwater from the downtown areas. And then the historic stormwater flow will be on the recreated Sand River. We'll daylight the stormwater near what is the headwaters of Barton's Pond. We'll utilize Barton's Pond forested wetland for temporary storage. We will not recreate Barton's Pond. We will use Barton's Pond as it exists today in terms of floodplain and forested wetland. We'll have water control structures, earthen dams with emergency spillways. And then after this remediation, we can begin the actual ecological restoration of the impacted wetlands. One of the things that we did, we developed a budget. If you do the entire restoration of Sand River, it's about $16 million. The thing I wanted to point out was we had, on our first line item, infiltration and detention, and we had appropriated about $300,000. Now with the ARA funding, we have $3.3 million to not only address and evaluate, but actually conduct some of the project itself. So reduction of stormwater volume was very important. This is the Green Infrastructure Project. EPA, in their stimulus funding, they emphasize the importance of green infrastructure. Green infrastructure was given a priority, and that is why we were able to capture this $3.3 million. Of that money, we got the bulk of the money in South Carolina that was dedicated to green infrastructure, so we're very proud of that. We have a number of research objectives that we want to achieve in this green infrastructure. First of all, we want to quantify the flows, make sure we really understand the flows as they exist today, and then we evaluate all the different projects that we'll be implementing in terms of infiltration and look at the reduced flows. That's important because that will ultimately reduce the cost of the restoration of Sand River. So that's a cost savings there. We'll quantify the concentration of the pollutants so that we can understand what happens as the stormwater moves through infiltration and what type of water quality treatment is afforded. We'll look at best management plan designs, what works. It'll again be a proof of principle project for us. We are going to use remote data acquisition. This is something Clemson is really innovative. And this is actually looking at the data using satellite and cell phone communications into the internet. You can actually, on a rain event like we just saw, you can watch the rain percolate, and we can really see firsthand if the infiltration is working, and we can optimize it. So this is a great and innovative tool that we've developed at Clemson, and it's a very cost-efficient way to do the monitoring program. As professors, we have the opportunity to work with our graduate students so that we can further this training and train graduate students in the concepts, and they will assist us in this project. We will work with the community again. We'll assess their environmental knowledge. We'll work with them as stakeholders, get their input in the project, which we feel is very important. We will evaluate the way that we handle stormwater. Should we change our management plans in terms of the way the city approaches that? And then these results, what's really innovative is anyone that has a web can come and look at what Aiken, South Carolina is doing with their green infrastructure project. It will be online. Citizens can see how efficient and effective this program is, but more importantly, this is really breaking ground for EPA and the states nationwide, and everyone will have access to this project. There are 8 faculty working on this. I'm in biological sciences. We have landscape architecture. We have biological engineering. We have computer sciences. We have forestry and natural resources. We have civil engineering, all coming together. So it takes that amount of talent to work with the city and the city's consultant, Wolpert, and moving this forward. And with that, I want to introduce Dr. Vicki Chance. She's going to talk a little bit about how we're going to go forward with individual elements of the project.
Thank you, Gene. My contribution to tonight's presentation has 3 layers: the educational, community involvement, and the ecological design of green infrastructure. Green infrastructure can be thought of as a network of natural areas and open space, such as parkways, greenways, wetlands, forested areas, and native plant vegetation. Together, these elements can be designed to naturally enhance stormwater detention, treatment, and infiltration. Green infrastructure projects also tend to foster community cohesiveness by engaging all residents in the green infrastructure planning process. As you are all aware, the form of downtown Aiken, with its wide historic parkways and side street parkways, provide an excellent basis for promoting green infrastructure. As Dr. Eidson has already mentioned, a quick calculation of the parkway medians leads to approximately 106 acres of parkway for green infrastructure. This past spring, several Clemson University graduate and undergraduate students were given the task of developing conceptual designs for the historic parkways and the parkways outside the historic area. The intention of the conceptual designs were to detain and infiltrate stormwater, as well as develop designs that are aesthetically pleasing. The students analyzed the site and developed a number of conceptual diagrams, some of which you can see here. To your left is an exploration of pervious paving mixed with bioretention. The center image, the central larger image, looks at a series of shorter bioswales that run perpendicular to the historic parkway. To the far right is a conceptual design where a student explored one of the longer bioswales outside the historic area, looking at some linear bioswale designs. And just a quick word about rain gardens. As you probably know, rain gardens are planted depressions that allow stormwater runoff from surfaces to be absorbed. This reduces the volume of stormwater runoff by allowing the runoff to soak into the ground instead of flowing directly into the storm drains. A lot of the student work we actually used for these, both for the poster presentations as well as inserting into this PowerPoint presentation. And so this is one analysis by a graduate student of the historic grid layout where she measured the size. And when we think about rain gardens as depressions, areas of depressions, the students started to explore which areas of the parkway were the topographic low. So where would water naturally flow and collect to along the parkways? And so moving from the analysis to the program elements, looking at where they could put in curb cuts or where parkways were lacking a curb, allowing water to the sheet flow to go naturally down to the topographic low, to the program elements, how many rain gardens, how they would connect rain gardens with trenches and using curb cuts. But I'll save more of the construction details for Dr. Sawyer. And so this same student then explored two alternative designs for the historic median. One was looking at a larger central bioswale within the topographic low of the parkway, and then splitting it up into two smaller bioswales, as well as having the curb cut to on the image on the lower right-hand side. Which brings us now to the overall plan in detail. So coming up with a larger vision for what Aiken Green infrastructure might look like, what we started with is using the first phase of the project where we're looking at along Park Avenue as well as the Newbury pervious parking, all which lies within the pervious parking. So there in the yellow and there is the Newbury. And then here putting in a series of rain gardens and bioswales and wetlands. Because as you can see in the downtown, you have two sub-watersheds. And so Wolpert calculated the boundaries of the watershed, the sub-watershed, and then looking at the flow. So you can see Park Avenue is perfect for capturing a lot of that flow. And I know aesthetically you have the historic boulevards, you know, where you have your walkways, and we do need to be more careful about the designs that we use for those parkways. But then outside that area, you have some larger parkways that would allow for larger bioswale designs. And so, you know, some of them are mounted up, as you see here. Some of them are naturally depressed, so the water would flow naturally. So some of these may have to be recontoured. And then here is returning again to Ashley's design for one of the larger bioswale designs with some wetlands. Now before I move it over and we shift this talk to Dr. Sawyer, I just want to say in closing, this spring semester's class really serves as a point of departure for more in-depth graduate research, site analysis, and green infrastructure design and planning. The initial project is for that initial area within the quarter mile walking distance, but graduate students in landscape architecture, two of which I have the pleasure of having here tonight, as well as graduate students from other fields, will be able to explore expanding upon this green infrastructure concept from the county to the city to the site scales. And with that, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Vicki. Good afternoon, everybody. I always like it when we have a providential rainfall event when I'm getting ready to talk about stormwater, because you know it's a lot easier to discuss these issues when it's raining than during the historic drought we just came out of last year. What I'm going to talk about is the suite of stormwater best management practices that we're proposing to promote the kind of infiltration that we're discussing here, and to address some of the issues related to polluted runoff. Now, some of the terms that you will hear and that you've already heard and that we'll be discussing will include not only water quantity, but also water quality. There are a number of different pollutants that are related to the impervious surfaces that we're talking about outside with respect to some of the parking areas and perhaps even some of the greenways. But the kinds of pollutants that we're talking about in general can sort of be divided into four parts. You've got your nutrients, your organics, your pathogens, and your heavy metals. All these things are things that are going to accumulate on parking areas and that we're talking about being able to address with the kind of practices that we're promoting. Now, some of the, I don't know if you guys saw, but over the last couple of weeks, there's been some coring that has been done in some of the parkways and some of the side streets to look at the potential infiltration rates. This is going to really help us out in terms of designing and analyzing these things. And these initial findings have been that these areas that we're discussing putting these BMPs in perk very well, on the order of 24 to 36 inches per hour. So there's a lot of water that we can move through the system very fast, which is great. Now, the different types of practices are basically going to be divided into three. There's the bioretention and bioswales, which Vicki talked about. Now, sometimes we'll use those terms interchangeably, but just for your information, a bioswale is essentially to be thought of as a conveyance, moving stormwater from one place to another, allowing some infiltration to take place. Whereas a bioretention area is much more to be considered much more of a depression for treatment. Okay, and the reason that the bio term is used in there is that we're talking about biological treatment by and large of the stormwater in this system. We're going to talk about biological treatment within the vertical profile. Okay, you're not only going to have treatment in these bioretention areas by the vegetation that's going to be there, but also by the microbial metabolism that's going to take place too. So you might get nutrient removal, say, from the vegetation, but you're going to get treatment in terms of the organics, some of the organics, and the pathogens from the microbial metabolic activity. You're going to also get some infiltration, depending on what the porosity of the soil is. And again, we're very early on in the analysis of the soil profiles. In fact, tomorrow I'm going to be picking up some of the cores from the engineering firm that did the core analysis and taking them back up to campus so we can start looking at those things. But we'll be able to determine the filtration capacity of some of these in addition to their ability to perk. So bioretention and bioswales, I need to keep myself on track here. In terms of bioretention and bioswales, this is basically what we're going to address. Now, this is how bioretention works. You get runoff that moves into the system. It ponds temporarily, like you can see at the top there. But over a period of 1 to 2 days, here it may not even take that long, that water percolates through the soil, and in some cases you may have to put an underdrain system. Again, depending on what the perk rate is here, we may not have to put an underdrain system into all of these. We're probably going to have to put an underdrain system into some of them if we're going to quantify how much water is moving through and what the water quality benefits are, just for us to be able to pull some samples from that. But again, it's a pretty simple process, and sort of forgive the generic design here. But again, you can take it from a sort of schematic like this into a sort of a colorful design like you see here. Again, you're going to have your pipe system, which is going to address some overflow in this case. But basically, you're going to get treatment by the vegetation on the surface, but also by the soil or the fill media here before it moves into the groundwater. Okay, some of the other things that we're going to be looking at are permeable parking. Again, from a treatment capacity, we want to be able to look at, with respect to parking, primarily organics and pathogens and heavy metals here. And the three types of permeable parking that we're talking about using here are our asphalt here, concrete here, and then these interlocking block pavers. Okay, we have to make sure that all of these meet the structural design to be able to park cars and move emergency vehicles across these potentially. But we also want to make sure that water, instead of running off these things, is going to infiltrate into those and some treatment is going to occur. So we will be looking at all three of these, looking at aspects of the subgrade, looking at structural integrity, and then looking at short and long-term maintenance requirements for these things. And then the last thing that I will... Oh, and I do want to talk about, I mentioned bioretention earlier. You know, you can't, what's the saying, you can't make an omelet or you can't make a souffle without breaking some eggs. This is just a little truth in advertising. When you're talking about installing some of these practices, there will be a time or period of construction. And you can see here that this construction, when you compare it with most construction, is going to take place over a period of weeks and months as opposed to months and years. This is some construction that took place up in North Carolina, but you can see here before construction began, looking at a month after construction, 4 months on, all the way down into 1 year later, you've already got established vegetation and the practice itself functioning fully at that point. So again, this just gives you a bit of a timeline of putting in bioretention. This happens to be a plan view and a cross-sectional view of a typical bioretention area. You can see that one of the great things about these things is we know that there are a number of historical considerations with respect to the vegetation and sight lines, and we intend to be able to address all of that. There is a wide variety of vegetation that that can be planted in these things and be utilized. Let's see. The last thing that I want to say is the last practice that we're going to be looking at. So we'll look at permeable parking, bioretention, and bioswales, but we're also going to be looking at cisterns. And the saying that what's old is new again, you know, these cisterns and the concept of cisterns has been around since the Roman times. But what we're going to be looking at with respect to their utilization in the city here is to be able to potentially capture some rooftop runoff, route that underground. So what would otherwise go into the storm drain system, and again, we were just looking at the storm out here and water just rushing down these downspouts, to be able to capture some of that, put it into a cistern, and then recycle that water for irrigation of the landscape around here. So you can dampen that stormwater profile that Dr. Eidson talked about earlier, and benefit by using less water, less treated water, and utilize that water that's captured off the rooftops in the cistern. So again, we'll be looking at all of those things.
Okay. Well, one of the things that we're finding from the preliminary results is this appears to be an ideal location to do this project. One of the things that I'm real excited about is EPA has entrusted us with green infrastructure funding so that we can be a model community. And I think Aiken has a long record of being a model community, and I'd like to see these projects implemented and push us forward in terms of sustainable development, sustainable design. And some of the concerns about the parkways, et cetera, the designs, or there are many designs that can be utilized. The trees do not have to be removed. We are carefully studying all the parkways. And so we're fortunate that we have many different parkways with many different configurations, and we can showcase the numerous designs here in the city of Aiken and make this city open to other researchers and other communities that want to learn how to implement green infrastructure. So if we give you a quick overview, we'll be glad to answer any questions you might have concerning this.
Good. Thank you, Dr. Eidson and Cal and Vicki. Thank you for your presentations as well and the whole team's work. Are there any comments by council?
Dolly, I'm glad you started when you did. And thanks to the city for doing that and working with the Hitchcock Foundation, who has certainly been ambitious. I had a couple of questions that I think you sort of answered already, but I just want to clarify it. This drawing is a they put all this in a place without trees, essentially. Our parkways, a lot of them have significant major trees. Can we do this without killing those trees?
Absolutely. We can not only do that, but we will design it so that we use native vegetation that reflects the character of the city, and it has minimal maintenance. One of the things that we're very concerned about is when we design these, that we design them so they're durable, they're cost-effective, and they fit in for the rest of the city.
What do you have to do about the parkways that we've curbed all the way around and things like that?
We will have to have open curbs. We'll have to come in and do some curb cuts.
Uh-huh.
And to do that, we have to meet with DOT. We have to get their approval for these projects. But if you can imagine a parkway that already has depressions in it, what we'll do is optimize the value of those depressions. We have deep sand layers, so we can infiltrate quite a bit of water. We'll also have the ability to look at permeable parking around them. So if you imagine the parallel parking spaces around the parkways, they may well be the permeable block pavement. And so you really are capturing the water before it goes down into the stormwater system. And that will help us in terms of greening it. It will enhance the beauty of all of our parkways that we involve. Every one of these parkways will really be enhanced from a public perception in terms of the beauty and the way they fit into the community.
And how many will you go out into neighborhood parkways as well, like two or three blocks from downtown or four?
That's our plan. We want to look at the two downtown watersheds. One of the real key goals here is we want to treat this as a proof of principle. And then once we do this initial project, we'll go after community block grants and other grants that will allow us to take this out throughout the entire community. We will concentrate on a variety of parkways so that we can demonstrate the ability to use this technology in a variety of settings.
Initially, we're not going to be doing every parkway. So
no,
we're just going to be doing a certain number of them. Some of the parkways, there might be 10% of the parkway that'll be worked on with different features. Others might be 25%, maybe 50%, but it's taking advantage of those open spots that are currently there. Also, by this water being able to get in the parkways and being able to recharge, we're going to need less water for the trees and the shrubs that are already are located in those parkways. An ideal location is right across from the municipal building, and that parkway is already somewhat depressed. And so the water is already running in. They'll just be putting in plant material that would enhance that area and be able to absorb some of the water and be able to, again, they're looking right now is how much sand is there currently? Do we have to go ahead and dig out some of the areas because there's too much clay and put sand back in there? But we're finding that we're to have some very ideal situations, and probably less work is going to be needed than we thought. And then as we go forward, there are some parkways currently that actually have a hump in it. And again, where we could find areas that we could work with, we'll depress it. One of the features that we're looking at also on the storm drains that are on the curb areas is to pipe that into some areas that would be able to recharge that are primarily sand. Think of it as like almost a septic type system where the water comes in off the street and then goes into the parkways through piping until it can't take any more water in that cistern type situation. But eventually we want to get to every parkway and maximize as much as possible. That may take 5 years, 10 years. For the longest time we've had, one of our goals has been with the Park Commission is to master plan every parkway. We've been able to do the downtown ones and some of these streets coming into the downtown, but there's a lot of neighborhood parkways that have never been touched. So now we're going to be able to go back in there and really formalize them, but not in the way that we have planned before. It's going to be formalize them with stormwater features that are going to go ahead and deal with some of the water that we're talking about in a very positive manner.
And these really are quite aesthetic. So if you can imagine parkways that look quite degraded today, incorporating walkways within the systems, opening it up to the community, it will be a great amenity.
Yeah, I have two questions. Is there a beginning and an end for your anticipated involvement with this project in Aiken?
Well, I'm a resident of Aiken. I intend to participate for many years to come in terms of bringing community block grants. What you'll find is if you look at where EPA wants to put their money, it really is focused on green infrastructure. This is a big new area. And I think that, you know, this is just the beginning. We need to continually be looking at where we're going to apply for the next grant and work with the city to do that.
Well, the reason I ask is I sense from your comments that there'll be communities around the country that'll want to take a look at what you're doing in Aiken, and we've got you first. We want to keep
well,
it till you get
we
through.
Do, and we're incorporating cyber infrastructure as part of what we call the Intelligent River Program. We're the only university that's focused on this, and this is unique. This allows the whole world to look at what you're doing. And so, again, we have the opportunity to be that model city and to pull in money that other cities wouldn't have the opportunity to do.
And the other question, as we know, we've discussed seven areas into Hitchcock Woods that are bringing stormwater in. Do you visualize any applicability from what you're doing with the parkways to perhaps any of the other areas?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. If you go out and think about Aiken Estates and other areas, the principles that we're developing here, we can implement those. And our whole concept with this master plan is to develop a holistic master plan to address all eight watersheds. And we'll use green infrastructure as much as possible because it reduces the necessity to have such a large system within Sand River itself.
Well, this is very exciting. Thank you and all the members of your team.
One of the last things that we haven't even gotten into is as we start, you know, this is great for parkways and parking lots and other things, but there are other features that you could have as we get into neighborhoods with bioswales and rain gardens, and so this, there's going to be some educational component to this in discussing with our citizens and our community at large ways that each yard or a neighborhood could look at on a case-by-case basis to, again, deal with the stormwater that's in those areas that probably would not have parkways. And so there's going to be some other unique things as we move forward.
Dr. Eidson, how much water do you think, when this is completed, that it would divert from the woods? In other words, not going to the woods, it would keep it.
And Cal mentioned that we were picking up the cores, and those are the things that we're evaluating right now, and we'll have that answer for you fairly soon. That's part of our preliminary engineering report.
Right.
But we're very excited now that we're finding we have layers at least 40 feet deep of sand, so that really tells us that if we can just get into those layers, and that's fairly easy to do, we should have a great amount of infiltration capacity.
And your first construction would be out here in front of the municipal building and the parkway?
It would be one of the ones we're proposing.
Mm-hmm.
And the actual construction is fairly quick. And, you know, you're not looking at an extremely deep construction. It's fairly shallow. And some of these, we already have the depressional zones. We'll just use those zones and implement the design with them. That's the beauty of bringing civil engineering with landscape architecture and with biological sciences all together working on this.
Mm-hmm. And you talked earlier in the first meeting that I sat in and also touched on it here, the parking areas, for instance, Park Avenue, where the cars are normally parked. Would you also do something there at the same time you're doing something in the park?
Our goal is if we can get the permits from DOT, we will do those demonstrations. It might be that we do those demonstrations on city-owned streets if we don't get the permits. But I think this will entice DOT and other agencies to really look at this in a different light because they'll have an actual case study right here in Aiken.
Very good. Any other comments? Well, thank you so much for your presentations.
Appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you for the wonderful job that you and your team have done. And this is a magnificent and super project.
Thank you.
And one that will really help us in the future going ahead. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Okay, we've got a minute or two if you want to take a quick break. Okay.
this. Well, she's interested in the situation, so she came down to some of the meetings.
I know where we're not staying.
In the lottery, number 103 out of 125.
Yeah.
So we're not going to get...
Somebody will tell us where we are.
Yeah.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to our Aiken City Council meeting on June 22nd, 2009. We appreciate you being here and look forward to any comments that you might have during the course of our meeting. As we get started, if you will, stand with us for our prayer and our Pledge of Allegiance.
May we pray. Heavenly Father, as we come to you tonight, we come to you with thanksgiving in our heart. Lord, for all the blessings that you have poured out upon us, blessings in which we're so undeserving of, Father, you continue to rain down upon us. We thank you for that. We thank you for your love, for your grace, for your mercy that you bestow upon us. Father, we thank you for allowing us to live here in this great city. We thank you for this city, for how beautiful it is. It's created by your hands. Father, we thank you for the citizens that we have here that are so willing to support this city, the volunteers that we have, the many citizens that just come out to take part in government. Father, we just pray that you'll be with each one of us represented here tonight. Give us clarity of mind as we discuss these issues. Lord, help us to do what's in the best interest of our citizens, what's in the best interest of this city and the future of this city. Father, we just pray that everything that's done in this meeting tonight will only bring honor and glory unto you. We ask these things in him whose name is above all names. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any additions or deletions to our agenda this evening?
Mr. Mayor, I know we have an item to talk about the Aiken Housing Authority commissioners, and given the absence of two members, I certainly would have no objection to deferring that to the next meeting.
Okay. All right. So we'll table that.
Could we just briefly touch on it, and then we could table it when we get after that? I'd just like to go ahead and make sure the information I gave you, if you want any more additional information, et cetera, is...
Certainly.
Okay. Very, very good. We have a motion and second to approve our agenda then as written.
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Okay. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please, all in favor. Okay, passes unanimously. Item one of the minutes, the consideration of the minutes of the work session, the regular meeting of June 8th, 2009. Any discussion necessary there? If not, do we have a motion and a second?
I move to approve the minutes of our last meeting.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Show of hands, please. All in favor of approval? Okay, passes unanimously. Under old business, first item is appointments to boards and commissions. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. We have one appointment for tonight, and that's by Councilwoman Price, who would like to recommend the reappointment of James Gallman to the Aiken Housing Authority. The appointment would expire on May 28, 2014. This is the one and only appointment you have before you.
Okay. Do we have a motion and second for that?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. I'll second it. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Are there any appointments or nominations anyone wants to make?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to recommend the reappointment of James R. Finley to the Building Code Appeals Committee.
Okay. Anything else? Okay. And that will appear on our agenda at our next meeting. Item two is Rose Hill zoning request change. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. At the last meeting, we discussed some items that Steve Mueller would like council to consider. These would be changes to the zoning ordinance, Section 3. We discussed it at the last meeting, so I have formally put this on the agenda. In addition to what we discussed, what we discussed the last time is allowing amplified music at Rose Hill Estate to continue till 10:30, allowing them to serve meals and set up from 10 o'clock till 11 p.m. It'd be from 7:30 a.m. Therefore, he could allow them to serve some breakfast and to allow concerts to be held every other week instead of twice a month. That way, if there was three Fridays in a month, he could hold three concerts. When I discussed these items with him further, he did mention to me that although BZA had given him permission to extend his hours last year for New Year's Eve into New Year's Day, it was for 1 year only. There didn't seem to be any problems, so in addition to those three items, he would like to add a fourth item if council would allow it to extend hours on New Year's Eve this year and every year of the year thereafter to 12:30 on New Year's Day for amplified music. I did attach to your memo here what the BZA, they did meet on these items and talked about them. And felt the only change they wanted to make was just one change, and that was concerning the New Year's Eve. If council would like, the procedure would be that this would go to the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission would discuss it. They would have some recommendations, and then it would come back to City Council. The very earliest they could discuss would be in July. It would then come back to City Council after their public hearing in August. So in September, you'd be receiving it for the first time again, assuming that you would like it to go to the Planning Commission for these possible changes. So for your consideration tonight, these are the changes that he is requesting Council to approve to the Planning Commission.
Okay, should that be a normal procedure, or why? Why would we want it to go there?
If any changes that you want to make the zoning ordinance has to, by state law, go to the Planning Commission, and they would need to review it and make a recommendation back to you.
Okay, so we don't have a choice.
No, you do
we
not.
Need to go to planning. Okay.
And any of these changes can be attached to his ownership of the property.
That's how they were in the past, and that's how I would think that they'd want to look at it again.
Okay.
Now, when this goes to the Planning Commission, I assume that they're going to evaluate the total noise ordinance, or are they going to? Are you asking us to ask the Planning Commission just to look at the changes that he wants?
Just the changes that he would like to have.
I have a minor heartburn in the sense that one of the items raised at the BZA meeting was that we passed a zoning ordinance, and it was no sooner passed than it seemed to be a frequent occurrence for Mr. Mueller to come in and ask for a change to it, which is fine with me as long as the neighbors are okay with it. But whatever we do, I think we need to make sure the neighbors have a say in it, because this is a probably, I could be off on the numbers, but it strikes me as about the seventh or eighth request for change to the noise ordinance, and it may indicate that we don't have a good noise ordinance, as opposed to simply needing to make changes to satisfy one person.
The only requests that I recall on the noise ordinance have come from Mr. Mueller. I don't recall, Ed, of any other requests for any other changes to the noise ordinance, or Pete, who you're the one that enforces most of the time.
I didn't mean to imply others asked for changes to the noise ordinance. What I meant to imply is that with all the changes that Mr. Mueller is asking for, maybe we need to look at the noise ordinance and incorporate his concerns into the noise ordinance rather than just giving him a continued exception.
By the way it's written right now, it allows City Council and the Planning Commission to look at it on a case-by-case instead of saying if you change the noise ordinance, then everybody, it would apply to everybody throughout the entire city as to the hours and times of the day and days of the week, etc.
And I don't think that would be a good thing. I think that doing it case by case is a good thing, is what I'm trying to say. Rose Hill is such a unique piece of property. I mean, there's not a square block that an individual owns. I mean, most every other block would have 10 or 20 parcels in that amount of space. And so I do think the fact that he has unique needs makes sense to some extent, where it might not somewhere else.
It is very different, and I think the most of the neighbors support what he's doing. I've not heard anyone come up and really complain about anything he's doing, and
I think it
does set itself apart from other city blocks.
I think the question was asked at the last time we talked about this, have we had any complaints? And the answer was no. I asked the question. I don't remember who answered it.
Pete's got his hand up.
We haven't. Yep.
Mr. Mayor, I can tell you, excuse me, from the public safety side of it, we have not, because what he will do every time he has a large event there, he'll actually hire an off-duty officer, and that is one of their jobs, is for security around the property, but he likes to post them also along Edgefield Avenue so the neighbors know they're there in case they have a problem, and then the officer would take a meter with them. So if the officer thinks it's too loud, he can meet it. Or if he's getting any complaints from the neighbors, that is his job to go to them and say, reduce the noise.
So that's working. That's working well then.
He takes a special effort into not to disturb the neighborhood.
Well, that's good. Thank you, Pete, for that.
That's great.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, I agree with Councilwoman Valders, and this is a very unique piece of historical property that's located there in the city of Aiken, and I would just like to thank Mr. Mueller and his mother for preserving that and taking care of it in the manner in which they have.
Absolutely.
I think these are ways in which he's reaching out to try to raise the necessary funding in order to take care of this of the property in a good way. So from that standpoint, I think it is a very unique situation that we have here. And just remembering back from some of the other requests that we have approved from Mr. Mueller, there were residents of that area here sitting in the council chambers, and they were in favor and were very supportive of what they were trying to do there.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you. And many of us can remember when that property sat for several years with just weeds growing and what have you. And it is nice to have them there. They've done a wonderful job. So we need to move this to the planning. We need to have a motion second and move it on to the Planning Commission.
Yes. Mr. Mayor, I'd like to move that we move this on to the Planning Commission.
Second.
Okay, we have a second. Okay. Any other comments? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Item 3 is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to annex property on University Parkway near Arbor Court. Mr. LaDuke, please.
Yes, sir. I'm going to read this by its title. It's an ordinance to annex to the corporate limits of the City of Aiken certain property consisting of 5 acres of land, more or less, owned by North Point Development Group, LLC, and to zone the same planned commercial. Council had several questions concerning this property, and we've asked Mr. Lacey, the owner, to be here tonight. One of the things that we have changed that you had requested is in the first condition, which states that the owner shall submit an amended concept plan for approval by the Planning Commission and the City Council that details the development of Phase 2 when the owner desires to develop that portion of the property. There's concern on your part that, and he doesn't know exactly how the future office buildings will look and where they're going to be located at. This would allow you to come back and work with him on any changes or any other approvals that you need. There were a couple things that we looked into further detail. One of them was the parking. You all felt that there seemed to be an abundant amount of parking there and that they may not need as much parking. We also were concerned about the distance between the road and the cosmetology school with all the parking that's currently there. If we were to look at just the office buildings, currently the guidelines that we have state that the building, between the building and the street, should be a maximum of 100 feet. Currently there's 125 feet, so there's an extra row of parking that normally wouldn't be there. So, you know, one of the things we could talk about would be, should the buildings be a little bit closer to the road? Then the cosmetology, which is to the side and behind those buildings, has a lot of parking. When we looked at the amount of parking that may be needed, the office building, assuming that they would stay at the 1,600 square foot size, 8,000 for each one, they would require approximately 53 parking spaces. If you assume that there were 50 students, faculty, and other support staff that was going to be at the school, obviously you need another 50. That's 103 spaces. They show 117. So they're fairly close to what's needed. Until they get ready to submit and we can look at it in more detail, if you're looking at the number of spaces, you could always have a condition listed here that would state that the parking shown on the concept plan is conceptual and will have to be reevaluated more closely with the site plan. So once we get the site plan in, we could always reevaluate it again. And I'm talking about reevaluating being by staff. Otherwise, the building facade of the school appears to comply. The other buildings would be coming back to you for compliance at a later date. So he is here tonight to answer any questions. And so this is the second reading, and it's also the public hearing of an ordinance to annex 5 acres of property of University off of University Parkway near Arbor Court in planned commercial.
Welcome, Mr. Lacey.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I apologize to you and the other council members for not being here last week, but I had previous engagements. But I will answer any questions that
no problem.
You may ask.
No problem. Are there any questions?
Mr. Lacey, last week in our last meeting in our discussion, we were talking about the parking here that's in front of the school coming out to the roadway.
Yes.
And we're wondering, from a standpoint, you know, we do encourage parking to be behind buildings instead of being visible from the street if all possible. However, with the raised medians and the landscaping, our parking areas look much better than they have in the past. But we were wondering with your not going through with Phase 2, if the parking immediately to the right of Phase 2 was being put there in place now, just simply because it was less expensive to do all this at one time, or?
Well, we, for economic, you know, impact, we felt that the more asphalt that we put down in one
application,
trip, one application would be more cost effective with the fuel prices. But we have reduced some of that front parking.
Now, the parking immediately to the left of the school would be actually the parking that would be utilized by the school.
By the school, yes, sir.
Okay, and so this parking going in here on the right-hand side of Phase 2 would not necessarily be utilized at this time.
Right, that's correct.
Well, what are the chances that you will decide not to do anything with Phase 2? And
very,
then,
very
then you'd have all that parking over there.
Right. And we can...
In that case, you may have wasted some money.
Yeah, that's true. We can adjust that parking, which we've taken into consideration to pull the building forward, you know, off of that back property line, which I think someone had asked that question before.
Okay, now I think we have two things, if I'm understanding. The parking in front of the building that Don mentioned, and also the parking on the right of Phase 2. Two different parking areas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you move your buildings, if you build them, mm-hmm. right? You move them up. And so that particular parking, would it go away, and would it be in back of the two buildings that you would be building?
Yes, they would be the proposed traffic pattern around the buildings with parking on the back of those buildings and to the side.
Okay, so immediately in front of that building, which would be facing the highway, mm-hmm. there would be no parking? It would be in the back of the building?
If there were any parking, it would be very minimal, because those buildings would be kind of a picture view of that property. And
okay, well, we would get a concept plan anyway.
Yes, you would.
To approve on that. But I think Mr. Wells was getting to the point that if you didn't have any parking in front, that would be good, and have the parking in the back of the building. Is that what you were talking about, Don?
If indeed, of course, with Phase 2 here, you know, if those buildings could be moved a little closer to the road and this parking be placed here, which would be then become behind the buildings on Phase 2, with just the driveway coming in.
That plan does not really show, does it?
Yes.
Yeah, those buildings could be brought forward to eliminate these parking places with no problem. Now, this here was just a proposal, because at this point I definitely do not know what type of professional business medical or whatever.
Right.
But that plan definitely.
Could you speak in the microphone so we could tape this?
I'm sorry. But we can move those buildings forward to fit the criteria and, you know, beautification and landscaping and, you know, everything that makes for a nice project.
Okay. So I mentioned two things. That was one thing. And then the other thing is about these parking spots on the right of Phase 2.
Right.
And you said you wanted to put those in for economic reasons.
Well, we were just going to grade it and make the entrance through those parking spaces. But if you would desire those parking spaces to be eliminated and just curbing and entrance.
Well, that could be a part of your concept plan when you came back to talk about the buildings or Phase 2.
Right. Okay.
And then you could... But my point was, I'm trying to visualize there, if you didn't go ahead with the buildings and you had the parking lots already striped and everything,
okay,
and they're sitting there, mm-hmm, and depending on what you finally decide to do or not do, you may have wasted some money
right
putting in those parking spots if you don't need them.
Yeah, right.
And you wouldn't need them unless you...
Well, that may have been my optimistic approach to this project.
Yeah, well, I don't want to be pessimistic
no,
at all, but you'd mentioned you weren't quite sure what you were going to do or when.
The cost savings would be considerable, yeah, for me if you
okay
didn't need
okay, well, that's
those parking spaces. Because, you know, at first, when the project started, the numbers were up there about 172 or 173 parking spaces that we needed. And then as we got into the project, those started dwindling some. And then with Phase 2 being accepted only when back to planning and and council approval, then those numbers even lowered. So that's what we've been taking a step at a time, with the building being brought forward a little bit and the elimination of other parking spaces. So this is something we can do. And,
okay. One more question.
Yes, sir.
The parking, now getting back to the school, the parking that's there shown on the diagram, that's adequate for you?
Yes.
You really don't need any of these other parking spots up front?
We do.
Those are adequate.
They are. All
right.
So, Mr. Lacey, if we were to just assume that you had an entryway into Phase 1, and Phase 1 just pretty much cut off right across here, mm-hmm, allowing the entire front parcel here to be Phase 2, then you would be willing to come back to Planning Commission and to Council with Phase 2?
Yes.
With the drawings and the plan?
Absolutely.
So pretty much all we would have on Phase 1 is the entryway into the school and then the parking that is adjacent to the school.
That's correct. But the retention pond would be designed to accommodate Phase 2 if it materializes.
Well, that's right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what we would be approving if we approve this tonight.
Okay.
Yeah. The retention pond.
Okay. Mr. Lacey, I just have one question about your placement of the buildings on the property, mm-hmm, and your parking lots on the right-hand side. The entryway to the property, is it where it is shown on here, or could it be moved to the middle of the property?
Well, the most advantageous would be for traffic flow would be to have it intersect with Arbor Court, is what I've been told with.
Oh, okay. Is that why it's there?
Yes.
Okay.
Future traffic control.
Yes. Yeah, okay. Because you have this large tree going between the two large buildings that are going to be up front. And I was thinking maybe, but if you are lining up the driveway, then it's a more point for me. Okay. Thank you.
When you talked about moving a building slightly forward, which buildings were you talking about just a minute ago?
The school, if so recommended, we could move that.
Is there a reason for it being so close to the back lot line?
We just put it on the back line.
I should know this, but I do not, so I'm going to ask you. What backs right up to this building?
Woods and other property.
Mm-hmm. Residential property?
It's who I'm purchasing it from. It's part of an 87-acre tract that we're taking 5 acres out of.
So the other part is not developed?
No, sir.
Okay. If you look at the aerial photography from 2007, uh-huh. you can see there's really nothing anywhere, no buildings anywhere close by.
And he's got all the required setbacks accommodated for here. So that would be kind of up to you then. Is that right?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Okay, are there any other questions from council? This is the
yeah,
second. Go ahead, Dave.
I just have one question, and again, I'm confused with this proposed corridor overlay district, which has really nothing to do with your project. If all of these buildings are built as planned, would it then comply with what we're proposing ultimately as a corridor overlay district requirement? Are you back there, Ed?
Well, the concept plan on phase two, Dick, we do not know, nor would we see until such time as Mr. Lacey would come back.
I understand that. Yeah.
So at that time, they would comply, phase two would comply with the corridor.
That's assuming that what he submits meets whatever we have at that time. Council will probably be getting the highway corridor overlay sometime late this year, early next year. The major area that we see right now is the fact that these buildings are too far away from the major roadway. They need to be within 100 feet. And again, the problem that we that Mr. Lacey faces and council faces is the fact that you're approving the cosmetology school today. He hopes that in the near future the business climate will improve such that he will be able to build a couple office buildings, but the worst case scenario would be what if those buildings are not built? How does that then affect the rest of the property that's there? And again, let's just say, for instance, the buildings are not built, the office buildings, and the school remained where it was originally proposed. Well, it certainly is not within 100 feet of the highway, and therefore would not meet the new regulations that are being proposed that council has not approved yet. You know, we're talking about something in the future that will be coming.
I understand, but if the other buildings were there, then it would be...
Then they should all be within 100 feet.
They all should be.
Well, the front two should be within 100 feet. You could always have some tucked behind
yeah.
two.
So front if ones. The front two were within 100 feet, then the placement of the cosmetology school would not impact compliance.
That's correct.
That. Yeah, okay.
But we don't, the fact is we don't know what's going to happen in the future.
Sure, understand.
And then what he does in the future would, if we had new ordinances or new whatever, it would apply to what is done in phase two?
That is correct.
No. Is that okay?
Yes, because...
Do you know what we're talking about at all?
Yes.
Okay, about the... We have this new ordinance that we're looking at for new buildings along these major corridors, and this is a major corridor. So in the future, assuming it passes the way it's written right now, all new buildings probably after January next year will have to be within a certain distance of this highway corridor or receive some exceptions for that.
Right, because that the XL D-cell lanes on phase two would come into play also.
Correct.
On that, and we would consider all that, and we would get the guidelines for the new ordinance of building code. So we're just anxious to start growing. Who knows? Maybe one of those front buildings will just be a corporate office building.
That's right. That's right.
I'm still having a little bit of problems with the parking spaces on the right and two buildings on the left. And if by chance they end up being owned by two separate persons, and all the parking spaces for those two buildings are going to be to the right, I'm wondering...
There'll be some in the back of the building.
Well, but you got the majority of them right here on the right.
Beverly, the ones over on the right-hand side, he has said that he would not put those in at this time, that would then become part of phase two,
right,
which we would not be approving tonight. That would be approved at such time... or the chance to be approved would be at whatever time Mr. Lacy came back with Phase 2. He has said he's also willing to take this parking and to move those two proposed buildings closer to the highway and place his parking behind those buildings, which, I mean, we can't approve that at this time because he's not coming to us with that, but he has agreed to just have an entryway into the cosmetology school without the parking there on the right-hand side. Phase 1, which we are talking about the approval of tonight, would only consist of the cosmetology school, the parking immediately to the left of it, and the detention pond.
I guess I'm looking out for when he tries to do Phase 2. And geometrically speaking, if the driveway is where it is and you have these two 8,000 square foot buildings, I don't know where you could, how you could, unless you put one of the buildings where the parking spaces are, I don't see how you could get, move the buildings up front, have all your parking spaces in the back, and then just let this be green space, or is that what you're anticipating?
Are you talking about not having this parking here?
Well, that's what he's saying.
This would be here. It would be on the concept plan that he would submit on the Phase 2, but not do them now like he indicated earlier. He would not go and pave them when he does all this work. He would not do that. You would wait until you decide what to do before building these parking places that would be for these two buildings. Now, they also show some parking behind the building right now in what we're looking at.
Right.
So what is the question? I'm sorry.
There's a possibility that he could come back for Phase 2 and reconfigure the buildings, reconfigure the parking lot, everything
that's
there.
That's all I'm saying, is that there needs to be some reconfiguration somewhere, because with this driveway being where it is and this parking that we want him to move having to be go behind the buildings, how is he still going to get 16,000 square feet of buildings on the and parking on the same piece of property? But I'll wait until Phase 2 comes and deal with it then.
But then how much, I'm a little vague on this too. How much, where will the parking that we approve stop?
Don? What I'm understanding tonight is that the parking would stop at this back line in here, so that all the parking to the right of the building would not be in the Phase 1 concept plan.
Yeah.
So you're approving the parking for the cosmetology school and the school itself and the detention pond that's back there. The area to the right of the proposed Phase 2, which shows like 60-some parking spaces, are not being approved tonight. That would allow Mr. Lacy the ability 6 months, a year, 5 years from now to come back, he could reconfigure the building. So he may decide to put a building where those parking spots are at and put parking between the two buildings. Or because just as the only reason, as it was stated earlier, the driveway is where it's located is because we are requiring him to line up with our report. Once that opening is there, he could turn the traffic to the right and left, or he could have to keep going straight. Currently, it's going straight.
Mm-hmm.
But in the future, it could always go around a building if you so desired, or if he desired. But he's going to have to bring all that back to City Council at a later date.
That's all right with you then?
Yes, ma'am.
Good. Well, and it goes along with what we were just talking about, you know, before the meeting about all this hard surface and drainage and everything like that. Maybe we'll have some great new surface to recommend that has come down in cost.
And that's what I was looking at is how you should look at it now, so that you don't have to tear anything up that you put down now, to accommodate what we may want you to do later on in Phase 2. But I'm satisfied with what he's doing in Phase 1.
Okay. This is a second reading and public hearing, so if there's anyone in the audience that wants to speak on this issue, you may do so. Not seeing or hearing anyone, back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to move that we approve this upon second reading. I would also like the wording in there that phase one has been reconfigured without the parking to the right, which would consist of the cosmetology school, the parking immediately to the left, and the detention pond area.
I'd second that.
Okay. All right. Any further discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Okay. Mr. Lacy, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, council members.
Item 4 is the second reading public hearing of an ordinance to convey a lot on Abbeville Avenue to Habitat for Humanity. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. City Council had their first reading at the last meeting concerning the fact that we are exchanging a lot that was originally conveyed to Habitat for Humanity. Unfortunately, the numbers that were given to you were incorrect, and we're moving down the street around three lots to a vacant lot, which they would like to build on sometime in the very near future. So by you passing this ordinance tonight, you'd be conveying, in lieu of the prior property at 724, conveys a lot at 731 Abbeville, parcel number 104-2009-001. And this is second reading and public hearing of this ordinance.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is second reading public hearing. If anyone would like to speak on this issue, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I recommend we approve second reading on an ordinance to convey a lot on Abbeville Avenue to Habitat for Humanity.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Under new business, first item is the first reading of an ordinance approving the sale and conveyance of lots and homes in Crossland Park.
Yes, sir. As council is well aware, the city is purchasing property in Crossland Park, and over the next several years, we will be probably purchasing up to 150 lots and homes. Meanwhile, we're getting ready to sell some property, some lots and homes that we have already purchased. Immediately, we have two homes and three lots that we'd like to sell to the Aiken Housing Authority. And in the future, as we renew these properties, we're going to be doing the same thing. Instead of tying up City Council's time on property after property after property, when we get ready to sell it, what we have done in the past at Ashton Oaks, when we sold 25 homes, we did not bring each property back to you. When we did the same thing in Tool Hill, we did not bring each property back to you. We passed an ordinance at that time saying that you have given the ability to staff to pass it under certain or to sell it under certain conditions. What we're asking here is that as long as we are getting the value out of the home, in other words, instead of bringing these back, we recommend that staff be given the ability to sell all homes at a price that exceeds or equals the cost of the home and the improvements. Example, right now we're buying some homes at $40,000. If we put $40,000 in of improvements into those homes, we'd be selling it at $80,000. Or it could be at 81 or 82. Whatever the appraised value is, as long as it's at that or higher than what the improvements were that we put into it plus the value of the home, you would give us the ability to do that. Now, if we decide to come back, and again, that home we paid $40,000, put $40,000 into it, and instead of selling it for $80,000, we decide we're going to only sell it for $77,000. You know, and there could be some very good reasons why we would want to do that. Then we'd bring those back to City Council for approval and the explanation of why we're selling property under the appraised value and under the value of what we put into the property. Again, that's part of the transparency and full accountability on our part that you certainly don't want a member of staff to be selling property much far below the value of what improvements that we're putting into it, again, unless there's a very good reason for that. So tonight, we're asking you to approve this ordinance, which would give us the flexibility to go forward with selling properties. As I stated, we have a contract that's already been signed with Aiken Housing Authority to sell 5 properties to currently. So if you approve this on first reading tonight, and then you approve it at second reading in July, then we'll be immediately selling it to them. And all of those properties are as a pass-through. We bought them for a certain price. We have done appraisals, some work write-ups. So we'll be selling to the Housing Authority for the value that we purchased them, plus the appraisals, the work write-ups, and any other what we call soft costs that would have been involved. And that gives us the ability to move forward and do those kind of things. And we're moving right along. We should be hearing something on our grant in the next few weeks on the 13 homes that we had submitted our grant for. It looks very positive. As of last week, they're still calling us for more information. If they weren't going to give us the grant, they wouldn't be continually calling us. We have hired a general contractor to oversee the project, Ron Feller, who many of you probably know. And he also has a contractor's license and the ability to hire people, so we'll probably be running the training program that we have, where we're going to get individuals who will come to work with us and have 3/4 their pay paid for through Job Investment Act with the federal government. So what will more than likely happen to a lot of the homes is the once you purchase the home and you're starting the rehabilitation process, and let's say that's $40,000, typically 50% of any rehab is materials, the other 50% is labor. And so if we could save 75% of that labor by using the individuals through the Work Investment Act, not only are we training individuals, but we are able to then lower the cost of what the improvement's going to be, and we could even give more value to individuals that are going to be buying these homes. So everything seems to be working in the right direction. I keep expecting some stumbling blocks any time, but we're moving forward. We right now own 25 homes, and we have an option on approximately another 80 of them out there. So, everything that we've told you so far, we feel is in the right direction. We're asking tonight then that you approve an ordinance to sell and convey lots and homes owned by the City of Aiken in Carlson Park neighborhood. And so this is ordinance is specifically for Carlson Park only. If we get to Edgefield, some other areas, then we'll come back to you for a new ordinance to be able to do that. And just since I mentioned Edgewood, we have homes that have been designed in Edgewood. We went out for bids. We received 10 different prices on the homes in Edgewood. We're right now evaluating those. We will be putting together a committee to decide on which contractor will be building those homes. We're not moving rapidly on this because until we sell the two homes in Tool Hill, we don't have the money to start these two homes. But the homes have been designed. We have the contracts in. We have contracts on the homes in Tool Hill, so it's just a matter of time on selling them. But we are moving forward in that neighborhood also. So, again, we're asking for your consideration tonight, and if you approve it, then the second reading would be held in July.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to move that we approve the ordinance approving the sale of properties purchased by the City of Aiken and Crossland Park for not less than the appraised value. Is that right, Mr.?
Not less than the value of the home and the improvements in the home.
Okay.
I'll second it.
Because it could be less than the appraised value. The appraised value could be $85,000. We might have only put $80,000 into that home.
But not less than what we are actually going to put into it is what you're saying.
Okay.
any discussion? Is it possible to get on a periodic basis? This is a massive project that we're doing. Is it possible to get a list of the homes that we bought and the homes that we sold, and, you know, kind of like a spreadsheet? So I've had some questions about it from neighbors, and I've been able to answer them because they've been general. But I'd just love to see how this project is progressing.
Sure.
I think it's a fascinating project.
It really is.
You're doing a wonderful job.
Every time we go forward working with the state and federal government, it's, you know, people think it's sometimes difficult working with the city government. Let me tell you, it's we're really easy compared to the state and federal government. But we are progressing, and we'll get you a list of the homes that we have purchased. We'll put them in our next issues. And the ones,
maybe something on a quarterly basis, just an update on what
we're
doing.
What I can do is we'll have a lot more information, and probably in August we can have Lisa Segura and Ron Feller and others come in here, and we'll maybe do a work session on it.
That'd be great. Mm-hmm.
We've talked, when there have been some prior projects, about, is Ron going to check the quality of the work so we don't end up with a, do you know what I mean, so that we have the kind of...
You know, he will be
woodwork and things that we, you know.
And that's one of the reasons we hired Ron, is one, he's retired, so we get him at a nice value. And he has his contractor's license. He has a business license where we could hire those other individuals. But he's built 29 homes already.
Yeah.
And so he's got some great experience. He sees this as a way to give back to the community. He is a board member with Habitat for Humanity.
I know, he's amazing.
His job will be looking at each house. Each house is unique. There will be a work write-up, and then overseeing the work that's going to be done. And so some homes we're going to keep the existing woodwork. Some homes we're going to tear it all out. We're trying to tear out as little as possible, because as you start tearing things out, you get into asbestos and paint and other issues that we prefer not to deal with, if at all possible.
Well, I just want to thank you for getting someone like him to do this. I really do, because I think that will make the training program better, and I also think that, I mean, we don't want to... It's great to train people, but if we end up with a product at the end that's substandard, it's not going to be good in the long run. And so that's just a great idea, I think.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you something about Ron. I've known him since 1977, I guess.
Something like that.
We both worked with DuPont out in Houston, Texas, for a few years. That's how I met him. And he moved back to Aiken before I did. But he is a quality builder, let me tell you. And something about Ron, I think he's slowed down. I haven't talked to him in a while, but I think he's slowed down a bit. But what he would do is, and he lived in Greenwood for a while, he would build a house, move into it, and then immediately start planning for his next house. And that happened in Aiken, too, when he started building. He built that little development out off of Richardson Lake Road.
Stonegate.
And beautiful homes. And he built the first house, and somebody came by and liked it and wanted to buy it. And so he said, okay. And then he was building the second house next door at the time. So he said, okay, I'll just move into this house, and so forth and so on. But he's a quality builder, and a fun guy, and I'm sure he's going to do the best possible job there. I think we're fortunate to have him there. Okay, we got a motion and a second. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 2, Aiken Housing Authority Commissioners. Mr. LeDuc, please.
And I know that we'll probably table this, but I just wanted to make sure that we're all on the same page. Currently, there are 5 members that we appoint. There are actually 6 members on the board, but one of those members is a resident. It's required by state law that individual has to be a resident in subsidized homes or housing by the authority.
Felicia Elmore is currently that individual. Council still has to approve it, and the way the state law reads is the mayor actually makes the motion and appointment of that individual. They are willing to add a seventh member to the board, which would then, if you say that the mayor should have his own appointment, like every other council member, then we still need to rotate. So in other words, you could have seven members maximum there. And we have, right now, these two gentlemen on my left are not appointing anybody. So if you would like to have it fair so that everybody would appoint a member, we could certainly do so. Probably 90% of the housing and the individuals that live in the housing that they work with is in Councilwoman Price's and Clyburn's district, if that makes any judgment part that you may want to look at. So council just needs to decide, how do you want to go ahead and subdivide the six members, unless the mayor is willing to go ahead and say that his appointment would be that resident. But right now, you know, that he really doesn't have a choice. They're going to go ahead and decide, because the mayor doesn't know every person that lives in the housing project out there.
Well, it says in your write-up here that that's state statute.
That is the state statute, but it doesn't state that the mayor can't have his own individual appointment either.
Oh, no. But the person has to live there.
That is correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I'm confused with the roster. Reggie Byrne is not a member.
No, he is not.
Okay, so as we have listed here, we have six. One, two, three, four, five, six. We have six people listed, one of whom's got to be a resident.
And that's the last one that's listed.
Yes. So there is room for one more appointment.
Correct.
Okay. And if the mayor would agree to take, well, anybody could appoint the resident. I mean, there's got to be a resident.
Well, let's make sure that's right. Roger's telling us the individual, according to the state statute, and this is news to me, would be appointed by the mayor.
If you look under the state law that we've attached here, in the second sentence, it says at least one of the commissioners appointed shall be a person who is directly assisted by public housing authority. And then as it goes down further, the very last sentence says the mayor shall appoint the person directly assisted by the authority unless the authority rules require that the person be elected by other persons who are directly assisted by the authority. So the mayor appoints that person.
Yeah, well, that's no hang-up.
If you appoint that person, then we all have an appointment because you'd have one added.
If I don't know the person, then I'll do as a usual dilly-do, get references from others and ideas and, you know. But it just has to be somebody from that.
Yes, yeah.
That's a resident of the housing authority.
So if you were then to be required to appoint the current chair, Felisa Elmore, if that were your appointee, then one of us could appoint Sarah Wood and the other could appoint somebody else. And then everybody would have an appointment.
Yeah, as it stands now, we're not abiding by that.
True, yes, yeah.
That's right, because Sarah Wood is not a resident of the authority. Is that correct?
That is correct.
It's got to be okay. So, I think each of us should have an appointee, just like we do on most of the other, except the election commission. I don't see a problem. Is there a problem?
Well, the only issue, again, if the mayor's appointment is a resident, then it limits who your appoint, the person is that you're going to appoint.
It limits it, but there are lots of those folks that are out there that live in the authority homes.
Right. There's several hundred.
Several hundred. So that's not a whole lot of a limit.
And what has typically been done in the past, now Felicia has been on the board for a long time, but they'll come to City Council and say, here's a person that we feel would be a great candidate. Felicia is leaving our property, and we recommend this person. Of course, you could say, no, give me another person. But if you're willing to use it as your appointment and to add one more member, then we would have the ability to spread the other six appointments out to every other council member.
Sure, I'm willing.
Yeah. So if we did that, then I would agree that Councilman Wells should have the next appointment. He's at large. So he would have the next appointment, and I would replace, my position would replace whoever, when Sarah Wood comes up in 2013.
Yeah, that's fine.
So if council's agreeable to that, we don't have to add this to the agenda next time. We could just...
Yeah, I can't imagine Dick or Leslie disagreeing with anything but Sarah.
I can't
either. Yeah. Well, if they did, they would have told us, don't you think?
Yeah.
Because it's pretty clear.
Let me go ahead and talk to Ivory. Matthews right now is the, she's really the new chair, or not chair, but the chairman of the executive director of the Housing Authority. As of October, she'll become then the executive director of CDIC, which is their nonprofit development arm. So let me go ahead. I'm going to be meeting with them shortly, and I'll just make sure that what we decide tonight they have no problem with, and then if that's the case, I'll put something in a memo to each of you for the next meeting.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay.
All right. Petitions and requests. First item, request for approval of water utilities on 0.77 acres on Bear Circle. Mr. Leduc, please.
Yes, you asked at the last meeting that Mr. Martinez, the purchaser, be here because there was a number of questions you had concerning giving utility service to this property. So he is here tonight. And again, the question that you have is that property already has city water. He would like to have separate water for each one of those sites that are out there. And actually, they're subdividing this property up, so there's going to have to be some extra water put out there. So he is here to answer your questions. You saw the seven conditions they had. Those have not changed unless council would like to direct a change of those.
Welcome, sir. Just Hello. Give us your name and your address, if you would, please.
Frederick Martinez, 861 Colbert Bridge Road, Windsor, South Carolina.
Thank you for being with us, sir. Okay, questions for council?
I'm just requesting four independent water meters for the property at Bear Circle Midway Estates, which is zoned rural RUD. And also wanted to make you aware, whether you approve this or not, is that these homes were built, mobile homes were built prior to 1973, and they probably would not meet HUD standards. And I don't know exactly what I have to do to make them meet the HUD standards, according to an inspection that was done by one of your engineers. It requires electrical panel improvements, and the meter cans outside need to be refurbished or replaced. Other than that, the houses seem to be in good shape, even though they're old. And that's what I plan doing, is exactly what it takes to make it livable. Nothing more, nothing less.
One of the questions you had the last meeting was, you know, to what standards will these buildings be brought up to? You know, they're in the county, so the county inspector will have to go out there, and before electricity is restored to each one of these homes, Mr. Martinez will have to go ahead and meet whatever criteria the county has for livability standards for each of one of those units. So we don't have any control of that, and that's going to have to be between the county and Mr. Martinez. But again, the county does have very similar standards. They follow the same codes that we follow under the state rules and regulation for building codes. So they would be very similar standards that we would have as far as livability.
Well, does a 73 and 74 mobile home with electrical in working order and the water in working order comply with the...
they would have to look at it and make sure that there are bathroom facilities and other conditions of the meets the standards. That's all I can say.
Did you say bathroom? Did you say bathroom facilities?
Yes.
Okay.
Have you done any planning, I mean, estimates of what this is going to cost you or if it's even going to be practical? Is that part of what we even consider?
The estimates that I've done in my head are approximately $3,000 or $4,000 per mobile home. Most of the damage in the mobile homes is in the flooring and the meter boxes on the inside. Some doors or windows may need to be replaced. They're all about the same age, so they all need just about the same thing. Most of the damage on the water, on the floor is related to previous water damage, leaks, and so on. They have not been lived in for approximately 2 years.
They just look like they need so much work. That concerns me a lot.
Well, I agree, but it's a business decision on my part, and I think that spending $4,000 or $5,000 per unit would make them habitable.
You're saying $4,000 to $5,000.
Yeah.
Are these in our fire district? They're not. I just have some real concerns. I did last time.
Yeah, my point above all is that if you do approve the water, I don't want to run into other obstacles as far as meeting HUD requirements, and then go ahead and spend this money because the meter cost is on me, and then having, you know, just wasting that money in case something unexpected, big roadblock comes up as far as the age of the homes and the liability for HUD requirements.
Well, my understanding from what the city manager said is that's an issue that the county has to determine. Is it the county that has to issue the occupancy certificate?
That is correct.
So they're going to have to tell you what you're going to need to do to get that occupancy certificate. That's beyond the purview of the council. I think our responsibility, as I understand the package, is to approve the separation of the meters.
Yeah, and some of the homes have to be moved a little further apart. There's some separation requirements between the homes that would require, you may have to put in some landscaping requirements.
Did you say that the homes would have to be moved further apart from each other?
Isn't that correct, Ed?
No, is that county standard?
No, that we have some requirements for mobile homes under 4.28,
yeah.
And there's some separation requirements.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
One of the proposed conditions is that number four, the possible conditions, that the property comply with the health and safety and unit separations requirements at 4.2.8. And 4.2.8 is the last thing in your package. That's an excerpt from the zoning ordinance. And I think the health and safety provisions are on the second page. That's the building code standards, which again the county would have a lot to say about. Refuse disposal, maybe the insect and rodent control. There are building separation requirements under D back on the first page. I think it's D. Yeah, D3E. Homes should be separated from each other by not less than 15 feet end to end, 20 feet side to side, 36 feet on opposite sides of an internal street.
And F says that no home shall be located less than 50 feet from the park boundary. And I thought there was one real close to the property line, when, but I'm not sure.
Yeah,
the bottom line is that he would have to, they'd have to abide by these requirements, right?
The separation.
Yeah.
Now, I wasn't thinking about the 50 feet from the park boundary, but I mean, that, you know, council can sure make that a condition if you want that one to apply.
Well, and not only separation, but everything that's listed here. Is that correct?
Well, no, the condition number four says health, safety, and unit separation.
Yeah, okay. So that's one item, four. Yeah.
Yeah, some of those don't deal with health, safety, or unit separation.
Yeah. 4.28 was developed for new manufacturing parks or mobile home parks.
Okay.
And of course, this is not new, but we're trying to get as many things within there to the proper code for the welfare and the safety of the individuals, part of that being that separation. Mm-hmm. You know, as far as, like I said, the building codes is stayed under 4.28. That's going to be a county determination. But again, council has the ability and to state whatever you want to when fulfilling a water request. You could make things more stringent, less stringent in any way that you'd want.
Seems to me, let's talk about this a little bit. If we are inclined to approve this, it could be based on you, Mr. Martinez, getting approval from the county and doing all the things that the county wanted.
Aren't you saying
this? I mean, you've got to anyway to make it livable, right? You're aware of that?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So once you did that, then council would have a decision to give the water, or not give the water, but we could
approve the county as far as the distance of mobile homes and so on and so forth, and then come back again to another meeting.
Well, that's only one way to handle it. Council could approve the water on the basis, and the meters on the basis, that you first get that approval from the county. And once you've got it, then you've also got the water and the meters. Now, is that logical or not? That's another scenario.
Again, the county's going to be concerned about the units themselves and the livability and health standards.
Right.
Ed, or the planning director, would need to take a look at his site plan to make sure that the separation, right, the boundaries,
right,
the county really doesn't care about those issues. Mm-hmm. That would be more of an issue that the planning director would look at and work with Mr. Martinez on. So if council would like to go ahead and consider giving him water, it'd be, you know, it'd be just like under the conditions that we have here. One, you have to go ahead and work with the county, get approval, and then he could go to the Ed and work through those other details that may be necessary. Mm-hmm. You know, we would not issue water until Mr. Martinez felt comfortable with what Ed's asking, what the county's asking, and we felt comfortable with what Mr. Martinez is going to do with the units.
Right. Are you aware that you'd have to abide by the landscaping ordinances and any other ordinances we had that apply to you?
I don't see anything in the conditions relating to county approval. I mean, beyond the obvious that they're the ones who give the occupancy certificate.
Yeah, the building code standards that we have, because they're not in the city, we're not going to be issuing building permits for the reconstructive work that's going to be done. You know, one unit, as Mr. Martinez said, it might just need 1,000 or 2,000. Another unit might need 4,000 or 5,000. Each one's going to be on a case-by-case basis as to bringing it up to livable conditions.
So it strikes me that he probably wants more information from the county before he makes a business decision to buy this property. But we could authorize the water. If we do, I mean, the additional meters, the breakout of the meters. But if we do, he still has to go to the county to find out what they're going to require be done. And he still has to comply with our separation ordinance and the seven conditions that we list.
That's correct.
Well, so that'd be a roadmap, but you'd have to go to the county to find out exactly what they would want you to do.
I would rather go to the county first to see what they have to say about the separation of both members and what was approved.
Sure.
That's what I thought you'd say.
Yeah.
Yeah, makes sense.
This water does nothing for me. It's have to go to the trail.
Well, that's right. Yeah, the separation is going to be us. The county would have, I don't believe the county would have anything to do with that. That would be our requirement.
You don't.
What would I have to do to get
an Ed would send one of your staff people to meet with Mr. Martinez and to say, okay, this one's okay, but this one may be needs to be moved. So that the separation is an issue that the city council is putting on you, not the county.
But, Mr. Martinez, if we were to go ahead and approve this tonight, saying that you were willing to meet those standards, if the inspector goes out and looks and it does comply with those standards, then you would not have to come back to City Council again. You would just have to get approval from the county saying that these are approved for living conditions, and then at that time you would be able to receive the water without coming back to City Council. If we let it go here tonight and the inspector comes out and says the mobile homes are far enough apart, and then you go to the county and they say yes, once you get them up to standards, then it'd be okay for water, then you would have to come back again to City Council.
Where's the next meeting?
It would not be on our, probably not on our next meeting.
Well, it's the second Monday in July.
He wouldn't have to come back. If council approves that he's going to get water under the conditions that we have here, the seven conditions, he doesn't have to come back to City Council. And it's just working through staff.
That's what I was saying. If he just drops it tonight until he talks to the county and comes back and just pulls this application tonight, or chooses not to act on it tonight, then it would have to come back to City Council.
Correct.
We could give him approval contingent upon those two things being met.
Well, contingent upon these conditions that are already there.
Yes, all of them. That are here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then he would not have to come back.
Yes.
Yeah, but we could just as easily defer it till our next meeting, and it would automatically be on our next meeting, wouldn't it?
If that's the way we'd like it, yes. I mean, it could go any way the council wants to do it.
Well, it strikes me you need to make sure, find out what you got to move, not move, and so forth, and you got to find out what the county's going to require. And it seems to me as though that's an uphill battle at this point.
You're absolutely right.
So if we agree to bring this back at the July
13th
meeting, that would give you time to work with our staff and the county.
Yeah.
But he can also save himself some time and some steps if he lets us go forward with the approval tonight with the conditions on it. Then he will not have to come back to us, and then he could just deal with the county and deal with staff. And if he decides after dealing with staff and the county that he doesn't want to do this, then it doesn't take effect.
Right.
There's nothing lost. So we could really act on this now and give you permission to go ahead and search further and take as much time as you want, and you will not need to come back to us if this is approved by the majority of council tonight.
He would have 180 days from tonight to make a decision whether or not to go forward with the water. In other words, if it was approved by council tonight, you'd be checking with the county, you'd be checking with our staff, but within 180 days, you'd have to make a decision, do I want to move forward to have the water meters or not? If you decide you do, that's fine, you don't have to come back to City Council, but if you decide that you don't want to, you have nothing lost.
Okay. But I can hardly believe the county has said all you need to do with those houses is move a meter somewhere. And I mean, I've been out there. It looks to me like they need a lot of work. And I just, they really do. I question whether $4,000 or $5,000 will make them safe and habitable and where they need to be. And to have, and I hope you've read 428, because there's a lot of requirements on there that are not inexpensive to do necessarily. I just have a problem with approving something that just, to me, looks like it's not going to be a possibility. Maybe if I could see the county inspector's report about what they actually, you know, I presume they evaluate the roofs, don't they? And
The reports that I have was evaluated the houses itself. I don't know if they did the roofs or not. They're mostly talking about electrical and the sea tax eligibility standards. I had no roof inspections done or anything like that. From what I saw, the contractor that I took with me, there were no leaks or anything. But you're right, from the outside, they look. They did not look good.
Well, I couldn't see them from the inside, so I don't know. Yeah. But
the inside, they look
Were you going to fix them up from the outside? You're going to fix them up looking nice on the outside?
Probably the only thing they require is paint.
Could you talk into your mic?
The only thing they require is paint.
Paint?
Yes.
And I think you mentioned some windows, right? That
there is one or two windows that have been broken, yes. I'm not replacing any windows that do not need to be replaced.
Well, it looks, I'm just looking at these pictures, it looks like there are several that are in bad shape, but that's not so?
I've been there three or four times. This has been going on for 3 months now, and I can't remember every little detail. I know that there's several, maybe there's two, maybe there's several windows that are broken.
You know, there's an opportunity here, obviously, to if Mr. Martinez gets approval from the county and does what they say, and then does these things that are listed on here, to make that property, those properties look nice. I mean, you put some landscaping and some trees out there, and you're abiding by the city ordinances. That could be a step in the right direction for that whole area there.
I agree. I just like to see more
specific.
I mean,
that's
specific.
The upside.
that's right. But we don't have anything specific. You know what I mean. I think they're going to need more than paint.
Well, you know, Jane, the county abides by the same codes the city does as far as inspecting those homes, and I do know that any house, whether it be a stick structure or whether it's a mobile home, if it's inhabited for any period of time, goes down very quickly, much quicker than if someone's living in the home itself, able to maintain the climate and stuff like that. So I think that, you know, from the standpoint of these things being uninhabited for the past 2 years, they're probably in worse shape than if someone had been living in them. So I would like to see them be brought up to speed, someone be able to live in these houses and be there in case something does go wrong, that they can give you information that you can repair it or fix it up.
My biggest concern is what this gentleman brought up, is that if I have to start moving mobile homes around, this is not going to be economically feasible for me to do that, and the expense of refurbishing them also. So I would rather have the contingency of the water contingent being contingent on the fact that the mobile homes are equally separated or as far apart as what the law requires.
Well, if we were to approve this tonight, Mr. Martinez, it would be contingent upon that fact, and it would also be contingent upon the fact that they were brought up to speed with the county.
That's fine.
And then at that time, you would have 180 days in which to act on either way. You could go forward if they met the county's approval and they meet our inspectors, our regulations. And then you could go forward with it at that time, or if our inspector looks at it and says it does not, and you're not willing to move, then you wouldn't have to act on it. You could just back away and say, I'm not going to do it.
That's fine.
Okay. We've got a decision to make here. Do we approve the water and the meters on the basis that he gets approval on everything else and he does these particular things that have been laid out? I think I support that. I can support that.
The only reason I could not, well, there's several, but the main reason is that I'm looking at these standards and what we would require. And I think some of them are going to have to be moved to meet these standards. They have to be. They're just not going to meet them. And I think that when we're talking about the amount of money he's talking about, I just don't see how that's possible. And I'm very uncomfortable. I wish they'd get fixed up too, but I'm very uncomfortable approving something that, you know, he said he can't move them and have a practical plan.
Is that what you said, Mr. Martinez, that you could not abide by the separation specifications if it required you to move them, which it does?
We don't know what the measurements are.
No, I know that, but let's say that you had to move them, or you had to move half of them.
I'm not willing to move them.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get to. You're not willing to move any of them. Is that what you're saying to us?
Yes.
Well, then we don't have a deal, I don't think, at all, because that's one of the stipulations.
But I thought we were meant to make a contingent on it. For all we know, they don't have to move them.
Well, that's exactly right. But if they do, that's what I'm asking. If they do have to be moved, once the inspector goes out there and does his measurements, are you willing to move them? Well, I thought you just said no, you're not willing to move them.
I am guessing that it would cost a lot of money to move them. And I would not be willing to have that money.
Okay, well, I don't know how we can approve something right now then without you knowing exactly what the deal is, what the county requires, and you get all your plan in order, all your homework, so that you know whether or not you can afford to go through with this.
Well, we didn't know anything about the space between the mobile homes. We weren't made aware of the last meeting, and I thought that didn't apply to mobile homes before 1975, according to.
I can't speak to that.
I think the confusion that is here is that
on
manufacture of new homes, that's 1975. To receive water from the city for these homes, council could require as many things they want to in accordance with the standards that we have for mobile homes. Or they don't have to. But we have standards here that are on the last two pages, and our intention under that condition, number four, was the unit separation was one of those conditions that the Planning Commission had discussed. The health and safety aspects, again, they don't have to be brought up to HUD standards as they are today because of this age of the units, but they still need to be brought up to the health and safety standards. But separation, I can't tell you right now whether they need to be moved or not. Based on the photo that we have, they may or they may not need to be moved. Only someone going out there can determine that. It appears that the one at 205 is rather close to the one at 209, and 209 maybe to 213. But somebody's going to have to go out there and measure it and see if it fits those requirements. Unless council is going to say that they're not going to require the units to have that separation.
Mr. Mayor, I have one concern, and that is that anytime someone comes to us for water that's not in the city, we have them adhere to our standards, our policies, and our requirements for in-city residences. And I don't want to relax anything tonight. I do think that the young lady that spoke to us last time might be able to answer some questions as to which, if any, is too close to the lot line and which, if any, might be not far enough apart. Because I think you actually did own those, do you not?
Yes, I do, but it
would... Would you please...
Yes, I do actually own the property now, currently, but because it was an inheritance and everything was real easy for me when I walked into this property, I've not actually personally surveyed or measured anything because I had no need to.
Okay. Can you tell me why they have been vacant for the last 2 years?
Because as people moved out, they left the mobile homes damaged to a point where I was unable to repair them,
okay.
And I won't rent anything that I wouldn't live in, basically. So I chose to stop doing that business and continue with my other business that has done much better than the trailer park, thankfully.
Do you have this page, page 123, with the photo of the... that shows the different letters of the mobile homes?
The overview?
Mm-hmm. D, E, F, G, H, A, B, C, D.
Yes.
You have that? There appears to be more than four here. And then you have a shed.
Right. There's actually four mobile homes and a shed. The shed is purely storage. It has no water ran to it, only uh-huh. electricity, and I believe the inspector said something about the electricity in the shed, but I can't remember. You'd have to look at your paperwork.
Okay. So we're looking at 205, 209, 213, and 217 as the units that you will be selling.
Correct.
Okay.
And the requirement of end-to-end doesn't apply here, but the 20-foot from unit to unit would apply.
Okay.
And 50 feet from the edge of the property would apply. The white trailer at the very bottom right-hand side is on a different piece of property.
Yes.
Is someone in that property?
Yes, this is the piece of property that I live on.
Okay.
So that one would not apply. 205, 217 would apply.
The mobile home in the bottom right-hand corner is actually on a completely different address. It's under Peace Drive, not even Bear Circle. It's a completely different road, even though they are mm-hmm. close together.
You have your own water?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Actually, there's seven mobile homes here in total that include the ones that I'm living in now. And all the mobile homes have been on one water meter, serving all seven mobile homes. But since I'm actually not selling all seven mobile homes, and I'm keeping what I'm living in and just selling the rest, that's why we're having to actually ask for new water meters.
Okay. But yours is going to end up right on the line. I mean, you will not have the 50 feet from the property line.
If council approves the water, we've already prepared to move line with a survey company. But there's, like we said before, there's no sense in him buying the property if he can't have water. There's no sense in the property being surveyed if it can't be sold.
Okay.
I don't feel comfortable with the information right now that I've got. Mainly because of the separation aspects, you don't know what that is, and that's going to make a difference in whether or not you go ahead with this. I guess, according to what I think you said, so maybe that's the first thing to do is to check that separation.
What's wrong with approving the water now, contingent on the separation, whether I'm willing to move the trailer at mobile homes or not?
Well,
then I could just decline.
I was in favor of that until you said you were not willing to move any trailers, and you don't know whether you are going to have to move any.
Well, if I don't have to move any, then there's nothing to
well,
be done.
Well, okay, well that,
approved.
That's
but
one way. That's one
it.
Way to look at it. I can go along with that, but you were pretty adamant about not moving any trailers, and it appears that maybe something's going to have to be moved here. So that's why I said what I said. But if council is willing to go ahead with the water approval contingent on everything else being done and moving any trailers that must be moved according to our policy, then I'm willing to go along with that. Certainly that'll save you a trip back here.
But I'm not obligated to move the trailer.
You would be in order to get the water.
In order to get the water, yeah, okay.
If they don't meet the spec now.
Okay. Do you have a copy of 4.2.8?
Yeah, but I thought that didn't apply to me because the mobile homes were built before 1973.
Okay.
That's not the case.
No, sir, I don't believe so. I really want, because there's a lot of stuff in there that you may not want to do. That's why I want you to look at it really carefully to be sure.
Well, we may be best suited to just to defer this to the next meeting, and that gives you a couple of weeks to get your information from the county and from the city planning staff. And if the information you get determines it's not a good business decision, then just call the city and take it off our agenda. And if it does, come back and we'll approve it.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Do we need to move to defer it or just...
Thank you. We can table it.
Okay.
Okay. Do we have a motion second to table?
I'll move to table till the next meeting.
Okay. I'll second it. Ed, would you be in touch with Ms. Martinez and... maybe he can get all of his information by the next meeting. If not, it would have to go to the first meeting, I guess, in July. No, that's second meeting in July.
There's only one.
There's only one meeting. First meeting in August.
We have 3 weeks. There's 3 weeks between the council meetings, so there's plenty of time.
Let's be sure, too, that he's aware of what we're going to require landscape-wise and pathway-wise.
Well, that's an excellent point, because we shouldn't surprise him. He ought to know exactly what's required. The county, I think, will be very forthright with you and tell you what you need to do to get the certificate of occupancy, and the planning staff should tell you what each of these seven conditions imply in terms of potential cost and labor and so forth.
Let's ask Mr. Martinez, are you aware of all the requirements that you'll have to abide by? As Ms. Vauders mentioned, are you? Well, I think it, you know, we're just concerned. We want to help you. I think everybody here wants to help you, but we want to make sure you. Well, it's not our responsibility, I guess, to make sure that you know what you're getting into, but because you'll find out when you go to the county and talk to them, and then when you look at our requirements. And I just don't know how much you've gotten into that. That you just want to make sure you understand.
Thank you.
All right, we're gonna table this thing to the next meeting. Okay, we've got any other comments about it? Let's vote on it. We've got a motion and a second. All approval to table it or continue it. Okay, opposed. Okay. It passes 4-1 to continue it to the next meeting. Okay. Item 2 under petitions, request for approval of historic marker in downtown Aiken. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, at the June Design Review Board meeting, they heard a request from the Aiken County Historical Society to erect an historical marker on Lawrence Street. This would recognize the 1953 gas explosion which occurred near Lawrence and Richland. The applicant states that they did not meet the criteria set by the South Carolina Department of Archives and History, so they did not approve it. However, the Aiken County Historical Society would still like to move forward, place this on Lawrence Street, recognizing that explosion. The Design Review Board voted 4-1 to recommend its approval, and so they're here before you tonight asking for approval of the historical marker for the 1953 gas explosion on Lawrence Street to be located near the New Image Building.
Okay, thank you, sir. Alan, would you like to say a few words?
Hello, my name is Alan Riddick. I'm the president of the Aiken County Historical Society, and we're coming for permission for another historical marker. And as y'all read in the opening. It's for the gas explosion in 1953 that killed 10 people.
Right.
And we'd like to remember that event, even though the state says it's not a significant event in the history of the state. I think it's very significant in the history of Aiken. So that's why we wanted to do this marker.
Okay, sir. You've had quite a few lately, haven't you?
Yes, sir. We've done. This will be about 15 or 16 we've done since reorganizing in 1999.
Right. Been busy.
Yes.
Okay. Any questions, comments, discussion?
I want to thank you for doing all this work and research and being sensitive to what's important in our community as well as statewide.
Okay, do we have a motion and a second?
Move for approval, Mr. Mayor. It's a wonderful idea.
Okay, all right.
Second.
I'll second it.
Okay, second.
Any discussion? Any more discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, approved. And we do. Just like Jane said, Alan, we appreciate your work you've done, your leadership in this.
Yeah, thank you.
It's very important.
Appreciate it.
I just wonder, are there any more coming on Lawrence Street or Richland or anywhere?
Well, our next one after this one is going to be for the railroad.
Right.
Just to make a long story short, we had one get run over on Lawrence Street and Park. And as it happens, the insurance company is going to pay us full price for it.
Good.
And we're going to be able to put a lot more wording on another marker. So that'll be coming next year in 10. So
it's going to be in the same location as the old one?
Well, we hope so. Yeah.
In that case, you would not need to come back before City Council since it's just replacing what was already approved.
Oh, okay. Well, that's great. Good to know that.
Good, good.
Okay.
Well, thank you, and thank your board, too, for their support that they give you. And
yes, we have two of them here tonight, Mr. Bill Gassman and Chuck Leopold.
Good. So. Yeah, they're two pretty good ones, aren't they? One of them looks like Santa Claus. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you.
I'm jealous of that, Bill. Yeah, I'm real jealous.
Please not.
Okay, item 3 is a request for utility service and billboards. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. This is a interesting proposal that we'd like to get some discussion on to see where and what you want to do. We're kind of stymied in some ways in that there are a number of billboards located just outside the city. And several of those are on the major roads going in to the city. In particular, the one that we started to work on as a developer came to us was on Whiskey Road, where Rick's Produce is at currently. And as I was out there looking at that billboard, started looking at the other billboard that was just south of there, the one across the street, the one just north of Walgreens, and on and on, there's just lots of billboards. I've given you a descriptive location of all these billboards, and we've had this discussion on more than one occasion as to what to do, and you have a couple policies in place. One, it says that if you're going to give them water, that the billboard, or it's got to meet our signage regulations. Signage regulations say you can't have billboards, so that means it would need to be removed. If you have an annexation, it says that the billboard needs to be removed. But a couple of years ago, the state legislature came up with new regulations that stated protection of billboards. And that kind of really tied our hands, so for the last 3 years approximately, we've been at a standstill concerning billboards within our community. My concern is because of the large number that we have, we're in a stalemate. We can't do anything about it. They cannot remove them without having to pay for the full value of that billboard over the next
number of years, that they have a lease agreement. So we're suggesting that if we want to do something with this issue, and which is why we're bringing it to City Council, that we may want to consider changing our utility policy and also our annexation policy, which would state that a billboard could remain. However, a written agreement would be signed between the owner and the city saying that once the lease agreement expires, that the billboard would have to be removed. Gary Smith has looked at this, and he could speak to you further on it, but feels that would give us the authority and the legality to make sure the billboard is removed at that point in time. I've been asked by some of you, are there risks involved in this? Do we absolutely know that that billboard will be removed? And I'd like to say that we feel that what we're proposing will allow that billboard to be removed. Can I say absolutely that it will happen without us having to go to court? No. No, we may have to go to court under that agreement, but the legal document that our city attorney would be developing for all parties to sign, he feels it would allow us to have a firm case going into court if need be. So I certainly could ask Gary those questions from a legal standpoint better than I can. We're raising the issue, want to raise the discussion so that we could hopefully come up with some solution to move forward from this point.
Anything to add?
The only thing I would add is, you know, we could have developed this policy 10 years ago, and we could have developed a policy that said, you know, you have to remove that billboard. And then, of course, the legislature passed this legislation that affects us now, and it's not foreseeable. It is foreseeable that the state legislature can change the law.
That's right.
It's not foreseeable exactly how they're going to change that law when they do decide to change the law. I don't think any municipalities have taken on this legislation yet. Nobody's willing to pay the expense associated with that. Mm-hmm. They know the they know that the billboard industry is going to take it as far as they need to take it in order to support their rights. And so it is going to be a very expensive process. But, you know, as I say in my memo, if you leave your policy the way it is today, then you're going to encourage properties that are outside of the city to stay outside of the city. A lot of these properties are in places where I suspect the vast majority of our city residents think they're already in the city. It just looks like ugly development in the city. And you could drive down Whiskey Road and see numerous properties that are not inside the city that have billboards on them that most of our residents think are in the city. And if you were to amend your policy, you would have some say-so in how that future development would be more attractive than it is now. You know, we would do as much as we could do to give you the assurance that once a certain time period is passed, or once the lease period is passed, that billboard would come down. But, you know, I'm not going to sit here today and tell you the state legislature isn't going to change the law or something else isn't going to happen that would change that.
And that billboard law simply says we can't force it down, but it doesn't say the property owner can't take it down if they want to come into the city.
That's correct, but the property owner does have that lease agreement with the billboard company, and the billboard company would enforce that lease agreement against the property owner.
Depending on whatever the lease agreement says.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
It's conceivable that some of the lease agreements could give the property owner an out to cancel.
Every the lease agreements that I've seen with the billboard companies always give the property owner the option to move the billboard move the billboard within the confines of the property in the event that the property owner is unable to develop that property because of the billboard. But I've never seen a lease agreement with a billboard company that would give the property owner the right to say, you got to take it down. Only when the lease expires would they be able to do that.
And had somehow Checkers got built and there's a billboard right in the middle of the parking lot?
No. But it's not on the property that Checkers is on.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. It's just real close.
County.
Well, I don't think it's any secret. I'm not a fan of the state legislature and what they do for the people of South Carolina in many cases and the municipality. So I'm not sure, with all due respect, I'm not sure I'd want to trust the legislature to recognize any agreement that we would make with a property owner to not renew the lease. They would have the authority to get back in our knickers, as they did here. There certainly was a complete sellout to the municipalities to pass that law.
No.
Complete sellout.
Well, it's the best thing we've got, I think, that I've heard.
Well, it's not
and
much.
It's better than nothing. It's better than what we have now.
Nothing.
How long are these leases typically, though? Aren't they usually long?
Oh, they're
usually 25 years.
25 years, yeah.
And then they'll have a clause at the end of that that where the property owner has to give notice by a certain date. If they don't, then it's a year to year after that, or it could be an automatic renewal for a period of 5 or 10, whatever the lease agreement says. We would have to review each lease agreement as these properties come before us to see what each lease agreement says.
Mm-hmm. Gary, would there have to be wording in here that would talk about the current lease? What I'm thinking of is, suppose it got down to 5 years from the end of the lease and the company came and said, look, we'd like to negotiate another lease here for another 15 years. They could keep doing that and we never get to the end of the lease. So would the wording have to be tied to that particular, at the time that you're in that the property's annexed in with the billboard, and it's that lease that we're talking about?
Mm-hmm. Right.
No additional lease that might.
That's correct. And we would actually be talking to the property owner about giving us proof that they've actually gone ahead and given notice to the billboard owner, even if it's way before the notice period, to let them know they will not be renewing the lease at this particular. That they know they're early, but their intent is not to renew the lease when that time comes up. The city will have a bit of a burden of making sure that lease notification date is properly calendared, so that they could check on that notice requirement again once that comes up. But we would be going ahead giving the billboard company notice we're not going to renew this lease.
Okay. Now, do you know anything about the lease agreements with the billboards that are, I think I counted 33 of them? I mean, is it fair to assume that they all signed 25-year leases in 2006, or are there some that would expire before that?
We were working with one property owner who has property on Whiskey Road, and when he was asking for utilities and annexing to the city, his lease agreement was about 3 years old. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. We were looking at that case, well, 3 years, may we just give them water on a year-by-year basis? That was only 3 years. Mm-hmm. Then when we got to Rick's, which is over 20 years, trying to go ahead and give a water and sewer on a year-to-year basis does not work well. Plus, they would be a business still outside the city that you're giving water to and sewer for an extended period of time. And that's when I gathered several staff members together and said, this way here could work. Is it the perfect way? Is it the best way? There's probably no perfect way. But this is a way that we feel 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20 years, there is going to be an end point for these. The question that I think was brought up, Gary, was if the legislators change the law again, and let's say we had 10 of these agreements signed, would our agreements be grandfathered in, or could they change or pass?
It would depend on what the legislation says. And if they, honestly, if the if the legislature was to change the legislation, it would be a reaction to what the municipalities have done to try to, you know, carry out their will. You know, but if you, I guess what I keep coming back to is, if you don't change your policy, Whiskey Road's going to look like Whiskey Road looks right now for the rest of our lifetimes.
The next 20 years.
But I think you can make a case that that's the way it's going to be. Because if we come down and get 20 or 25 of these agreements, then the billboard lobby just goes to the legislature and says, hey, these agreements are void. You can't sign them. And
but the question becomes, do you want a property that looks like the Rick's Produce property looks right now with a billboard on it, or do you want a property that looks like a newly developed property under our new zoning ordinance with a billboard on it?
With the proper signage, landscaping, curb and gutter.
Right. And, you know,
neither.
The thing that worries me is that, I mean, I don't think these properties are ever going to want to come into the city if they have to lose their billboard lease. I just don't think so.
The billboard leases actually were pretty attractive to properties that weren't developed like, you know, these new restaurants that want to come to town or that sort of thing. You know, a Rick's Produce type of property is an ideal property for a billboard. A mall property, it's not as enticing to the property owner because they've got much more lucrative development on the property, which is what we're trying to attract, I think.
I'm just wondering if we'd be better. I mean, I'm just talking.
I'm just thinking
out loud here.
Yeah.
I mean, would we be better off grandfathering? I mean, let them have a billboard and fixing up the property and coming into the city and not having donut holes?
We'd be better off that way.
And having a zone where billboards are allowed? Or, I don't know, along Whiskey or along a, I don't know. I just see this as being a real legal battle that's going to cost a lot of money, and I don't know if we'll get out of it what we want to get out of it anyway, you know.
It should not be a legal battle, because the property owner that wants to annex into the city and receive our services is going to be a willing participant to sign the agreement that I will not renew that lease and that billboard will come down on such and such date in such and such year. And they're a willing participant, versus we're not forcing them to come into the city and accepting our water and sewer and annexing the city. And they're doing it because they want our.
We have several requests.
But the billboard company's only reasonable expectation to that property, to have that billboard on that property, is whatever length of time their lease is for, the original term of the lease. All of the parties are doing things pursuant to an agreement that they freely entered into.
But then we have to see what the original term was, because, I mean, right. I could say, well, I want to come into the city. I'll just put it off a couple of years, and this year I think I'll renew my lease for 25 years, because that's a nice little bit of income I'm going to get. And, you know, if I'm in the city, I'm going to have to pay city property tax.
Like your tree cutting ordinance, where a commercial property wants to become a commercial property, and they clear cut the property first.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But at least, you know, even if they did it that way, we know that even if it's 25 years from now, that billboard should be removed. Now, we could just go ahead and the other way you said it was, they're there, live with them. People really don't know they're in the city or in the county. There's even people that like billboards.
Well, a lot of businesses like them, I know. But.
Well, if you do what you're talking about doing, you would be opening up other. I mean, really, the zone would be a Whiskey Road zone, and there's a couple of other zones, but I mean, that's where they are now, Pine Log Road. But you would also be opening up other city properties that presently don't have a billboard on them to come to you and ask for a permit to have a billboard. I'm not sure you want to do that.
I don't know either.
If you can get all of the parties coming to the table agreeably, you're probably better off, but I mean, that's council's decision.
And you ask, you know, what's bringing it to the table now? in the past year, we've had two properties with billboards that started the discussion on water and sewer. The first one, as I stated, was going to have the billboard expired. The lease was expiring in 3 years. But that we felt we could maybe deal with. This one, though, has it over 20 years. And that just started making us think, you know, what can we do to get the proper type of development that we want to see along the entrance corridors into the city of Aiken? And that's, again, as I stated earlier, is it perfect? Not entirely, but we feel it could advance us to the point where we want to go eventually, which is to eliminate the billboards at some point in time in these donut holes and to see the development occur in these donut holes. I believe that as the economy improves, we're going to see more and more development wanting to come in the city, and this will allow us to at least talk to them instead of just saying, well, you got a billboard, can't do anything until that billboard is removed. I mean, the Rick's Produce site has several other issues that need to be dealt with. The billboard's just one of them. There's some stormwater issues. There's some entrance issues because it's so close to the intersection at Eastgate Drive. But there was no sense even talking any further until we could resolve the billboard.
Well, I think something is better than nothing, and I think this is a good way to go.
Mr. Mayor, I agree too. I think that there, you know, naturally there's properties that are out there that are in the donut hole areas that you know, are not meeting any of our regulations at this time, and some of those are eyesores, and some of them folks fix up pretty nicely. But for the most part, I would hate to see a piece of property that was an eyesore within the city remain that way simply because it had a billboard there. And I think with us having just even a potential hope of that billboard coming down one day, you know, if it was 10 years, we may luck out and catch one that the thing's going to expire in 3 years or 4 years when the property owner is approached and needs the property coming to the city. So we could get some down quicker than that. Some may take longer. But, you know, if we get one of them down sooner than that, I think that we're that much better off.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Can we get a list of the, we have, what, 33 billboards? Could we call them and find out when the leases expire?
They have no obligation to tell you that. You could do a title search of the property. The lease may be recorded. It may not be.
Well, I mean, if they don't want to work with us, so we don't have to consider them coming into the city either.
But, right.
You know, we have no assessment of, this may not be an issue that can do anything for 20 years.
Well, I mean, as each individual property comes to the city, the planning department will be asking for a copy of the billboard lease, and that we'll be able to evaluate each one on a case-by-case basis. I mean, if the guy comes to you and he in 2010 he wants to annex the property, and you discover that in 2010, just a month before he came to you to annex, he had just renewed a lease for another 25 years. I mean, whatever council is practicing at that point may very well say, you know, I just don't like the fact that you did that. We're not going to annex you.
Yeah, but you. Using the rationale we've talked about tonight, we would say, sure, it's better than nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't.
I don't know. I think we look at these issues every time when they come up and ask questions about it and consider each issue.
I think if we were to go to the property owners immediately and say, you know, tell us, or even if we could and say, tell us what your lease is, this is what we're planning on doing, I think that would trigger the industry to try to react to that in Columbia much faster than on as one property comes to us and we deal with that property and then.
Well, I suspect that that's going to happen anyway. If we were to get 10 or 15 of these properties with billboards and they come in and we enact this new policy and they say, okay, fine, we promise to get rid of our billboards as soon as the lease is up, and we've got 15 or 16 of those agreements, your billboard lobby is going to be on its way to Columbia, and guess what? You're going to get everything negated.
Well, Dick, that's okay. At least we've tried.
Well,
we've come up, it's before us. Something is before us here that's better than what we have ever had before.
right or wrong?
I don't know.
And so the question
to
me is, do you want something that's better than what we have? We don't know what's going to happen with the legislature. We don't know.
Well, I don't know that it is better. I think it just would enable development
within
the city that has
built. Well, we just have to decide on our own what we think is the right thing to do.
Why would they even have to go to the legislature? All the billboard companies would have to do would be to make sure all their, once they learned about our law, would just make sure all their leases are 30-year leases.
Or have automatic renewals in there or something.
Or in the clause or something like that.
Well, but, you know, candidly, at this point, you may very well have a, you know, like the previous property owner for Rick's Produce may have had no desire to develop that property. A current owner of Rick's Produce may be able to see that, you know, that lot now is worth a whole lot more than I paid for it. But only if I'm willing to develop it as a commercial property and you know, those property owners may be seeing that and saying, you know, we're not going to renew those billboards. You know, back when those billboards were, if there was a billboard put on that property 25 years ago, I mean, there was nothing around that property at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't valuable as a commercial site. Now it is. Right? It's worth a lot more as a commercially developed site than it is as a billboard site.
Are there a lot of commercial developments that must have water and sewer?
It's just
yes.
About every one of them.
They really.
Very. I mean, you know, you can operate a Rick's Produce without water and sewer, but you.
Yeah.
You can't operate a Carrabba's or another restaurant without water and sewer.
Most of them already have water. It's the sewer.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if they're going to develop, if they had water and sewer, once they reach that 50% threshold of improvements on the property, then they have to go by all of our new standards, and our new standards say you need to meet the signage requirements. Signage requirement says you can't have a billboard. So that's how we affect most of our changes, is through that process.
And now that Whiskey Road is what, in the city?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Then if they get water and sewer and they're on Whiskey Road, they need to be annexed, right?
That is correct, like Walgreens.
Okay.
But and we, you know, and this doesn't, we concentrate on Whiskey Road, but just about every major road, Silver Bluff, Pine Log, Richland, the bypass, we could find certain numbers of billboards that have been erected in the last 10 to 20 years. Some of them the last 5 years.
It's interesting.
Okay. We need to make a decision, I think. Do we have a motion and a second?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to see us go forward with this, and I'll support it. I'll make a motion that we go forward with this.
I'll second that, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. All right. Any more discussion?
I'm going to vote for it, but I just think it's so, I want to think about it some more, too. I really would love to see us be able to do this. I just question whether we are just spinning our wheels. I don't.
But just so we're clear, this is a resolution. It doesn't require two readings. There's only one reading of this particular motion.
Well, Gary, this will take care of the utility policy, but we will also need to change our annexation laws, and our annexation laws say the same things. That'd
be the next step.
That's the next step.
I'd like to come back to City Council with an actual resolution or ordinance talking about changing our utility policy, which, yes, a resolution would satisfy that. But then there's also the annexation, and deal with them both at the same time and put it such that Council could see it in a written form, in the ordinance form. So that, because again, for Councilwoman Waters' sake and Councilmember DeWire's sake, you know, seeing it in writing exactly what we're stating, I think would be good. And we could bring it to the first reading at the next one, then they actually have a public hearing if someone has to, any comments they would like to have on it.
I really appreciate your taking the effort and time to try to propose something like this. I was just so devastated when I read about that billboard legislation all those years ago. It seemed to me that they really did plug up the holes to keep the municipalities from having any say.
Yeah, we're stymied right now. The rate with that legislation 20 years from now, Whiskey Road will look just the same as it is today.
And it may anyway.
No, I believe that if we do this and we allow annexation and the utility request, you're going to see properties over the next several years where there are currently billboards improved.
Well, it's a tough issue. I'm, you know,
assuming the economy gets better.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you seen one of the HD billboards in Columbia yet?
No.
At night, it'll blind you. It'll absolutely blind you.
Downtown New York City.
Well, it's another reason why I would love for us to get together with our counterparts in the county and kind of talk about common issues, this being one.
I think the county has kind of come to grips with the billboards now, but the ones that are already up are not in their lap.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Opposed?
I can't support it.
Passes 4-1.
But I'd like more than discussion.
Okay. That's
why
the end of
you,
our agenda items.
Dick, why don't you set up a meeting with your delegation and discuss it with them? Because if I'm not mistaken, they supported this, but I don't want to speak in totality, but
yeah, they all supported the billboard legislation. They're supposed to have regular meetings, and I went to one in January, and I haven't heard of a delegation meeting since. But I thought that they had quarterly meetings.
Tom Young has had one.
Tom's had them individually, yes. Yeah. But the delegation, I went to one at USCA, and it was very informative. And they were talking a report on the voting office and the veterans office and so forth, but I don't know that they've had one since. I just have one quick question. The planning meeting minutes indicate that the Equine Committee has asked the city to set aside money to buy open space for equine uses. Do you know anything about that, Roger?
The Equine Committee passed at one of their meetings stating that the next time we have the 1 cent sales tax that we would consider putting aside some money to provide open space for the equine users in and around the city.
Okay.
And what I gather from that is, especially trying to set up a trail system, or if there was other opportunities, like just in this past few years, we tried very hard to negotiate to get the Ingram property and add that to the Steeplechase property to combine it. But again, it's just one of the 1 cent sales tax items.
Well, our packet included the minutes of their work session, and it was quite informative with regard to the meeting they had on discussion of zoning in the horse district.
One other thing I'd appreciate, and I don't know that it has to take a lot of space, is there were some votes tonight. I mean, when we were reading the minutes at the different commissions, and it said 5-2 or 4-1, and you knew what the majority thought because that's what was passed. But I wondered if we just couldn't have a sentence or two about reservations that certain commissioners had to give us a little insight into some worries that our concerns that might not pop into our heads. You know, they've taken the time to go over this, and I don't think you need to go into great detail, but, you know, now the one about the Mr. Lacey's cosmetology said that they voted against it because of, and the one with the Mr. Martinez said it didn't comply with, and that was great. But there was another one said the vote was for it and one opposed. And I'm just curious, you know, I'm not sure.
Unless,
I'm thinking.
Unless they'd state at the meeting why they're opposed, you know, sometimes you all will vote opposed but don't give the reasons why.
Uh-huh.
The gas explosion sign, I believe the one person voted against it, not seeing the significance, and do we want to have a sign talking about an explosion here in downtown Aiken? But
okay, but that's all I need to know. I just wondered if there was some.
But again, they not always do. They express it at these meetings. Why?
Maybe the reason was that the owner of the property that it's going to be right in front of didn't want it there or something like that. I'd like to know that, if that's the reason they didn't vote for it.
Yeah,
you know.
If they give a reason, we'll let you know what the reason
is. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, we are adjourned.